720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, live.
Nothing like an American band.
Right, I love that. Joey, nice job on the music. Joey's going to be playing some of the hits and the bumper music as we come in from a time that I think we can sort of celebrate. It's a little bit early, you know, obviously to celebrate, but is there a limit to celebrating? Isn't that, I think, the nature of celebration is that it takes you into what is known, and I'm doing the air quotes, the business is the wee hours of the morning.
I don't think there's any question about that. We just keep celebrating all night long.
Dino Tiberi, longtime friend, compatriot, and oftentimes regular superstar guest in for the duration today. In a day that had a lot that happened, if you are a sports fan, this is one of those, you know, kind of the converging of the constellations of sports, right? You have the Halley's Comet of sports, which is like the Olympics, right? You know, it's an occasional, it sails through, and usually you're asleep through most of it, but maybe you get out in the front yard, and I think I saw it. And then you have the NFL Hall of Fame speeches, you know, as a longtime football fan, as I think we all are, as all decent Americans.
That's right.
Have become all, you know, NFL and football fans. You know, the Hall of Fame thing is kind of the precursor to the season starting, where you see some of your favorite players, whether it's your favorite players, you know, kind of currently, some favorites from all time. You certainly see some of the ones, you know, that are there kind of in that team photo of Hall of Fame people, either the ones just being inducted or the ones about to be inducted or the ones that are hoping potentially, and, you know, like your Kurt Warner's,
sure,
where they feel the need, or, you know, Peyton Manning, obviously, right? But he's, you know, he's just done,
right? So he's
gained a little bit of weight. I saw him. He's been Papa Johnning it.
He's not training anymore.
I think what you do, you know, and I don't know that there's been an athlete that's done this officially. Of course, we know that Bo Jackson expanded, you know, into a kind of a large size. And I think you're wasting an opportunity there when you can make so much money doing the whole expansion contraction thing.
Well, Dan Marino did it.
Well, exactly. So he's one of those guys that did it. But I think on the expansion side, very few athletes actually catch the upswing of it. They catch, you know, the wave going up, and then
until
also
they get to the top, and then they got to come crashing back down.
Right. So what Peyton does, you know, longtime athlete, you know, the top of his game, you know, but, you know, he hurt his neck, you know, but he's retired. You know, he achieved just about everything that you could, right, as a quarterback. Arguably, Dino, you think he'll go down as one of the best quarterbacks.
I don't think there's any question about that. Longevity, he's was productive a year in and year out. He won a couple Super Bowls. He's done everything you check off on the greatest quarterback of all time checklist. So.
3-4 MVPs.
Right.
And then he also has kind of that extra X-factor gift as an athlete of being an incredible pitch man. Relatively funny with his chicken parm. You taste so good.
Well, right. All the stuff he did on Saturday Night Live, you know, a couple times he was on there. So, you know, it's some good stuff.
He's good, but it's all been, other than, of course, the injuries, but I think coming, you know, and, you know, getting past the injuries and winning a Super Bowl, even though statistically it was worse than Trent Dilfer's, I think it's all been like, this is a great story. I think then we need one of those behind the music situations where he's, I don't want to say,
it's rock bottom, and then bounces back.
And then the bottom dropped out for Peyton Manning. So what happens is he's disillusioned with the inability to be out there as an athlete anymore. He thought he could take it. He can't, right? So what he does is he's got his good friend. We've seen him with Papa John so much.
Oh, sure.
Is that he's got nothing to do all day but order more Papa John's.
And between that and the chicken parms he's throwing down, could all add up.
Who could resist when they taste so good?
That's right.
And so he balloons up to, you know, what do you think he needs to get? It's got to be a good, respectable, he's got to be like 350, 400 pounds. He's got to be like 6. Well, no, he's 6'5", right?
Yeah, so, I mean, he was already at probably 240, something like that when he played, so. Right. He's a big guy.
Yeah, so he gets up to, you know, 3, you know, something where people, it's not something, you know, with the right outfit you can hide. And then he's like, you know what, you know, the retirement's hit me, it hit a little bit of depression. You know, then he can do maybe a pharmaceutical ad, right? I'm feeling good now, right? And then he does the, it really tastes so good the whole way up, right?
And now he's eating nothing.
Then it's too much. So then he gets like a gastric bypass. Maybe he does that. Or maybe he just does like Dan Marino.
Sure.
He joins like Dan Marino, throws him the ball, right?
Or passes the torch in Olympic terms.
Yeah. I mean, And then you do the whole thing because you wonder, because otherwise, I mean, I think Peyton Manning is too big. I think he transcends, his personality transcends just go be a commentator, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think you're right about that. I don't, you know, he's, he could do pretty much anything he wants at this point. But we'll see what ends up coming out of it.
Okay. Well, back to the reason I thought of him and saw him today and noticed that he was working on his Papa John situation is that it's the Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of Fame thing. And more than ever before, I mean, I'd noticed it for the last handful of years, you know, and now just because of the expansion of NFL Network and just the ability to see more things, that whole thing is just really blown up where you have basically stadium sized crowds. And the speeches themselves are so anticipated not only by the crowds or fans like us, but also by the athletes themselves. I mean, they're either timing each other, they're rating each other. And then afterwards, you know, Rich Eisen.
And they're all reviewing how that speech was phenomenal.
I loved it when you said this. When you mentioned your dad there, I just about lost it. I mean, they're doing like the sports breakdown of the action of the speeches. Joe, you didn't get a chance to see it, but is that an event that you have seen in the past, the whole NFL Hall of Fame speech thing?
I have. I wasn't able to watch it today, unfortunately, but you're absolutely right. It's that idea of they're making it this grandiose event like everything else that never was before, whether it's a draft, whether it's the Hall of Fame, whether it's any little nook and cranny event that has to do with these players. It becomes this blown up thing.
See, this guy. See, Joey sees it from like the cynical, real way. Just like I saw Peyton Manning, he's just getting out there enjoying, you know, not having to go to training camp. I see, you know, Subway ads and gastric bypass commercials. And Joey sees it too, as like the NFL is sitting there and saying, what is it that we do? How can we monetize it? Or just create more entertainment products for America?
And they know that people are starved for football. They could really be doing just about anything if you've got a Hall of Famer or, you know, some professional great player that's out there. People are going to watch it. I mean, it happens every year. And like you said, it started out, it wasn't on anything. It was like ESPN carried the actual speeches.
On the Ocho.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look what they've done with the ESPYs. I mean, it's become a huge award ceremony for sports teams. It's a weird dynamic that they promote like crazy up into it, and I always think people don't really care enough, but then they do.
and they also slot it in a perfect time because it's right after the All-Star game. There's really nothing going on in sports, so the spotlight's on them showcasing all these athletes.
Well, here's the thing. When you bring up the ESPYs, obviously, is all sports and a little transgenderness, because didn't they have, like, you know, wasn't Bruce Jenner part of that, too, or Caitlyn Jenner?
She was right. Is that their promo pitch?
No. In a couple of years. Well, they're trying to, like, you know, stretch the envelope. It isn't just sports. It isn't just the football thing. You know, they're kind of bringing, you know, Channing Tatum is in the ESPYs in the front row clapping, I'm sure. I know he looks like he was athletic, at least in Magic Mike. I mean, there's some... There's some moves in there. But on the Hall of Fame thing, we were watching it. Well, I should have been sleeping like Joey or like you, Dino.
Exactly.
But instead, I was, you know, I couldn't. I had the TV on, and, you know, they kept talking, and I kept listening. And you know, Brett Favre did a speech. It was 36 minutes long. Granted, he's got a 20-year career. It's hard to stuff it all into just the 8 or 10 minutes that they suggested. But he was like 15 minutes in before he said anything about football. It was all about his mother-in-law, about his beautiful daughter, about his one daughter going to law school, about his brother, you know, training for a triathlon or something. I mean, it was all these other things, and I get it. But see, they're trying to kind of showcase the entire life, right? Not just, you know, hey, it was a great career. I want to thank my coach. I want to thank my teammates. You know, they kind of bring everybody into it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's really expanded, and there's no like, you know, not like these other award shows. There's nobody playing orchestra music to get them off the stage. So, you know, they're going to ramble on as long as they can get in there. That's their window to get it done. So 36 minutes, that's a long speech. That's a lot of people to thank.
They were checking if it was the record. I don't know why they don't have those stats on hand.
Someone's got it archived someplace.
Okay, so before we go to break, here's the kind of things that we want the listeners to be able to, 312-981-7200, chime in on, add your thoughts as far as Hall of Fame speeches that you've heard that you appreciated. Hall of Famers, like, who are, you know, because some of these players, like, you knew, you loved, you watched, but you don't necessarily think of them until you say, like, hey, that's really old Mean Joe Green.
Yeah.
You know, there he is.
Now he's not so mean.
Well, he's less mean. He's right. He's kinder and gentler. So your favorite, you know, Hall of Famer, that kind of thing. Plus, we're going to talk Olympics. The Olympics is going on right now, and although it's been kind of mired in floating bodies, you know, in the water, in the Zika virus. Right. But it's still, this is the Olympics. So your favorite Olympic moments, Joey's printed off some of those top 10 ones. You can share those as well. And then family, either road trips or vacations. Dino, you were going to head to Lake Geneva just for lunch.
Yeah, basically just for the afternoon and then turn around and come back. We always have a good time up there, so we thought it was a chance to get up there, but we kind of nixed the idea, but we're going to reschedule for another day.
What is that adventurous spirit, right? Get in the car.
Oh, absolutely.
Just,
let's go.
And just go, because there's some world-class chowder up there at Popeye's, not the conventional love the chicken at, or there's a party going on in my mouth Popeye's, but it's a regular, very nice restaurant. Just happens to be called
Popeye's.
So, and we're going to talk about family vacations, like getting out there, getting on the road, whatever you do, the family trucks or the Griswolds. If you've got a suggestion, because I want to do that in the next couple weeks, if you've got a place to go or a place not to go, you can share that as well. 312-981-7200. It's Dane and Dino in for this is the Dave Plyer Show.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. 720 WGN. Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, Michigan Avenue. A beautiful night. Who's saying this? That's Queen, right? Okay. This is like guess Joey's bumpers. 312-981.
Name that tune.
7200. You know, that's the next thing that they need to do. And because Joey made me think of some of the ways that the NFL is kind of monetizing some of the things that they do. Dino, you attended the draft this year.
I did.
Which went from, as they've described, because you look at some of the footage when they show, to try to give it that historical kind of basic basis, you know, where it was a hotel room with just a couple guys sitting around a bed with a Gideon Bible, you know, like doing the draft. And then now it's Ferris wheels and, you know, laser light shows.
Stuff. Yeah. The 30 for 30 in 1984, when they were going over the draft, you know, Pete Rozelle's in some hotel room, as you mentioned, there's nobody there. There's like ESPN was in its infancy
it's in
then.
Fort Worth
so,
or something.
Right. And they're just, you know, there's a bunch of guys sitting in a room and there's two guys talking in the background, you know, on these picks. And Mel Kiper made his debut there in the 80s. And,
how big was his hair at that point?
There were small animals running out of there nightly. But, yeah, so, I mean, it started there. And then now, it's like you say, it's, you know, the draft this year was unreal. It was, you know, a lot of pomp and circumstance and a lot of lights and just, you know, red carpet. You know, it's just like it was an award show, basically. It seemed like that's the feel you got when you walked into the auditorium theater over at Roosevelt University. It was cool. It was a good time, and, you know, I was glad I was able to get down there and see that, so it was fun.
On one side, you know, for a sport that really does have kind of a short season when compared to, let's say, hockey, right? You know, that just seems like it. If you're the Blackhawks, you're going from, like, you know, October, November
all the way to June, yep.
Right? But giving fans even more things to love and kind of expanding the things that they can do, you know, and the draft is certainly one of those. And now the Hall of Fame situation. So looking at it as they showed some of the footage of some of the previous, and you're not going back, you know, forever. This wasn't back to like the, you know, the Vince Lombardi, you know, early days. They went back to like 93 when I think Ed DiBartolo Jr. was inducting, you know, I don't want to say Joe Walsh, but obviously that's the next bumper that Joey's going to play. And it was just basically the building that I think has expanded quite a bit, and just some like folding chairs out in front. I mean, I mean, there was a number. It was a decent crowd, but it was a couple hundred, not basically
not a
stadium.
Whole room, right. Yeah.
And you look at the ways that they're monetizing. So Dino, for a draft situation, it isn't just to try to create a TV product, which they are doing, but they're selling tickets, right? You guys had to, tickets.
Yeah, we had to go online and actually, you know, won tickets. So, and then that gave you the opportunity to get into the theater, and it worked out great. You know, you had to get tickets. You couldn't just show up and get in. So it's, you know, like you said, when you're outside, everybody, you know, just can get in there, and there's, you know, I don't know what the, as far as the admission stuff was then. I've never been to a, you know, induction ceremony, but, you know, I can imagine a lot of people back in the day just showed up with their RVs and rolled up, and everybody came out and watched the speeches. I mean, Walter Payton, when he was inducted.
Well, that was still like relatively, I mean, it's not recent, but it isn't going all the way back, because I would love, through the magic of maybe YouTube, and maybe it's there now, and during the break, we'll take a look at some of them, and 312-981-7200, you can share your favorite speeches or favorite, you know, Hall of Famers or favorite Hall of Fame moments, because I don't even know if they existed. Was there, you know, was there, or did Ray Nitschke just get, you know, or did like Dick Butkus, they did speeches, right? Or
yeah,
was
they
it
did.
Was it a banquet hall, you know?
Well, no, it was, I mean, it was outside. It was normally just outside at the actual Pro Football Hall of Fame. They had it outdoors, and they had everybody, you know, you show, you know, all the former Hall of Famers are sitting behind them in their yellow jackets, and, you know, they go out and do their speeches. So it's, you know, that's how it was back in the day. It's, you know, it's obviously evolved since then, but I there were a lot of guys, and there was not a lot of coverage then. And now, like you say, everybody's doing, you know, there's NFL Network's there, ESPN's there.
Well, the guys who were getting inducted, and I think it was eight of them, and there was maybe six or so that were current, like, players or coaches, you know, people. And then there's the, like, the Hall of Fame, like, Veterans Selection Committee, right, who picked a couple.
Ken Stabler was one of those, I believe.
Yeah. He was one of those. And there's some correlations to sort of a Ron Santo situation, a player that was, you know, beloved on his team, maybe kind of a iffy player statistic-wise, whether it wasn't an over-the-top obvious statistic decision to get in. And then when that person passes away, you know, not only is there just kind of a groundswell of support and feelings, you know, by the fans and people who loved what it is that he did, because, you know, obviously the moment of that person passing away, but then also I think it just brings that person's career more into focus. Unfortunately, it's after they've passed, but that seems to be what happened with Ken Stabler.
Yeah, and there was a special on him I watched not too long ago. He was one of my favorite players in the NFL,
right,
when I was
mine
growing
too,
up.
Right?
You know, all the Oakland was like the, you know, the Outlaws. They were always they weren't the America's team. They were like the exact opposite. And Stabler was one of those guys where he just comes out with a gruffy beard and, you know, makes up stuff as he goes along. And so, yeah, they just had a special on him about that on NFL Network. I believe I watched that, and it was good. It was real good. And now he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, so it's just kind of the cherry on top of it. But unfortunately, it was after he passed.
It's really cool to kind of have that look back, whether it's through some of the footage that you see because you're watching today's NFL Hall of Fame speech. But, you know, they put those clips together just in general to make it more, I think, of an entertaining, you know, visual product. Like, they have to build in all these little, you know, montages and vignettes to kind of show you some of the other stuff. And some of it, whether it's draft related, and you see that, hey, they're at a Motel 6 in the, you know, in a room answering a phone or making a deal as opposed to a giant ballroom. And then you see some of the way that the game has kind of evolved. And
right.
You know, you just take some of this stuff. It's so hard. And it's like when I talked with the guys from the old time radio show, Carl and Lisa, when, you know, you see your kids every day, you just don't notice that they're growing. Right. And
right.
So when you're watching the product all the time, the game doesn't seem to have changed like that much to me than when maybe 20 years ago,
sure,
when I was watching it.
But it's all evolved right in front of your eyes.
Right. When you see that footage, right, the old time footage, you see how different it really, really was. And it's so cool to have. And when you hear some of the talks from those players that played then about how absolutely different it was, you bring up the Raiders, you know, and you say they're kind of like, I think they really were like,
yeah,
a biker gang.
Yeah, they were.
Because weren't they just like...
Well, they would get the guys that nobody else wanted. I mean, you get the
Lyle
Alzado. I mean, he was number one. And then you just go right down the list.
And John Matuzak.
Right.
You get these guys, and the way that they describe, just the game was much more violent. Like, it's hard to say, right? Because the players are bigger and faster, and the,
yeah,
collisions are probably better. But you just talk how dirty they played. I mean, it was like they're constantly trying to poke each other's eyes out. And,
yeah, they had. I mean, the head slap was legal back then, so you know, you actually just whack a guy right in the side of the head and then run and go in and try to hit the quarterback. And
that should
they
shake
had to outlaw
up.
That, obviously. But yeah, it's pretty amazing how that game has really changed since. If you go back and, you know, for a historical perspective, go back and watch it on YouTube, you could really learn a lot as far as where we're at now.
We're going to go through some of the selections Hall of Fame-wise for the NFL today. We'll go through some of them, kind of break down their career, and some of the speeches, right? And, of course, 312-981-7200. You can share your either favorite speech of all time, your favorite Hall of Famer, a player that you really liked as they induct a new class. Today we did have somebody, and it doesn't have to always just be football. 773 said, the worst Hall of Fame speech that I saw and heard was by Michael Jordan. It showed what an arrogant SOB he is. So it doesn't always, right? You go out there, hopefully you're, you know, at one with your fans, you know, reminiscing about the greatness of your career. Sometimes it strikes people the wrong.
In Jordan's speech, I watched that, and he torched just about everybody he could think of. So that guy might be onto something there.
We'll break that down as well. 312-981-7200, and of course your vacations, the Olympics. We're going to talk all about all that. When we come back, we're going to talk with the NFL.com guy. He's going to be on hold in just a second, too. Right now, it is 2:30 WGN News time. The news is sponsored by, I'm not sure. Here's Roger Badish. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Dave Plyer, who's on a much-deserved day off. Who knows? He is maybe, he's got his foam finger. He is off in Canton, Ohio. As we speak, all we need, Dino, is if we could somehow, you've got obviously Harry Carey down, but we could channel John Facenda. You know, then, of course, we'd be in good shape. The world is watching the NFL Hall of Fame game, going to be coming up a little bit later on today, kind of a lot later on today, between the Packers and the Colts. And some Packers and Colts were front and center today for the induction for the Hall of Fame. On the line with us, we do have Adam Rank. He is from NFL Network and NFL.com. Adam, welcome to WGN.
Get it.
Oop, we got you?
Yes, sir. I hope so.
So an exciting day, and we've been talking a little bit earlier in the program about how the NFL is trying to make what are kind of functional days within their schedule are just all part of the thing, whether it's the draft or whether it's the Hall of Fame, trying to make them more exciting, trying to make them more entertainment products that fans can watch and enjoy, and tonight was no exception.
Yeah, it's one of the things the NFL has done a great job is just creating these tentpole events, as you were describing. Like, even the schedule release is now a huge event. Like, this, everybody knows who they're playing, but when the schedule comes out, everybody wants to talk about it. Of course, the draft the last couple of years being in Chicago has been a rousing success. It's brought a lot of life to it. You know, if you ever went to the draft at Radio City Music Hall, it's cool if you're actually in the building. But I know last year, being out in Chicago, being out in the park and everything of that nature, like, it was a cool event. Like, it was really a lot going on for the fans. So the Hall of Fame has really taken a step up too. And I would suggest to anybody, if you ever get an opportunity to go, and this wasn't the year to go because there's too many Packer fans around, so you wanted to avoid it. This was the year, right? Because, like, not only that, like, it was Brett Favre, and then it was Tony Dungy and Marvin Harrison. So you know they're going to be showing replays of the Super Bowl. And I'm like, I swear to God, the first time I see Rex Grossman, I'm out. That's it. But so any other year, you know, I would like to – you got to go out because they've done – like, it's almost unrecognizable the way Canton looks right now because they've torn down part of the stands and they put in that huge stage and there's, like, a hotel there and, like, all sorts of crazy stuff going on. So I'm looking forward to getting back next year when it's safe, you know, and checking it out because it is really a cool event.
Well, I don't know what the numbers were as far as the viewership, but, you know, we all love the NFL Network and the kind of not only entertainment but also kind of education, right, on the sport and the history of the sport that happens there on a regular basis. But when you looked at some of the kind of flashback to other ceremonies and speeches, like, this event, regardless of what's happening as far as the TV numbers, but in person, it's just enormous now.
Oh, no, absolutely. And not to knock, like, other sports and the way they do their Hall of Fame ceremonies and everything. I just feel that the NFL, and it's really the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it's not part of the NFL. I know a lot of people don't know that there is a distinction because the Pro Football Hall of Fame is a thing in and of itself. And their production values and just the way they present everything. And I think getting rid of the presenter speeches and going to those video tributes was a huge boost. It kind of keeps things going. And it's just a cool show. You know, it's just something you want to watch and something you want to learn about. And even some of the players who perhaps you never saw play or anything like that. I know I'm right at the cusp. I don't remember Ken Stabler playing, but I've heard a lot about him. I'm left-handed, so my dad would always talk about it when I was a kid. Like, you're the snake. You're like, okay, cool. Like, the guy seemed pretty rad, you know?
Yeah,
he's got a cool nickname.
He was something else when he was playing. I mean, I did get the opportunity growing up to watch him a lot, and I was a huge fan, as I mentioned earlier, of the Raiders and, you know, John Madden, that whole mystique that they had. And, you know, he was one of those guys that kind of transcended the sport in the 70s, you know, and as it evolved into where it's at today, he's, you know, one of those guys that you look back on and, you know, through the NFL films, you're able to see a lot of things from back in the day that really make you appreciate what's going on now, because those were the guys that kind of set the table. And, you know, you see some of the results of that today with the guys that were getting inducted in the Hall of Fame. Who did you think today was the, as far as all the speeches that went on, who was the guy that really stood out? I didn't get a chance to see it. But besides Brett Favre, well, you know, with his love fest, was there anybody else that?
Yeah, That's the thing. Like, I know, like, I was born in Schaumburg, or it might have been Park Ridge, wherever the Lutheran Hospital is. Grew up here in Southern California, but I was born to hate the Packers and Brett Favre and everything like that. And my mind didn't change. I still feel the same way. And like, it was very emotional. I was very happy for him, but I'm not that happy for him. I didn't see him thanking Jim McMahon for being that mentor who got him there. And I'll have you know, Jim McMahon, 2 Super Bowl rings, Brett Favre won. But anyways, Favre's was fine. You know, like, it was, I'll be perfectly truthful with you. I watched the whole 36 minutes and I didn't feel like it was that long. It was kind of, you know, he's a legend of the game, you know? And so you weren't really bored, and he hit the right notes. And I know, talking about that Oakland game was, I don't want to say it's amazing because it was a tragic circumstance for him to go out and play, but I definitely remember that game and the standout performance that was. And so for him to talk about it, you know, as a human being, you just kind of really were drawn to it. But two of the sneakily, like, great speeches, Kevin Green was amazing, and Eddie DeBartolo. And I grew up, like, not liking the 49ers. I got it both ways, you know, because, like, you know, the Southern Californian in me obviously didn't like the 49ers, and the Bears and 49ers had a little bit of a rivalry in the 80s as well. So I'm happy to not like Eddie DeBartolo, but he was really good. And I really enjoyed, like, some of the stories he was telling. He was cutting up Jerry Rice.
Yes,
so
he was.
I felt that was I thought that was appropriate. So I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was fun. I think the NFL could use some more owners like that. You know, I wish we had that kind of, like, Mark Cuban type owner who is just not afraid to shoot from the hip and just kind of have everybody's attention like that. So I thought it was a refreshing change.
Well, as the listeners know, we're talking with Adam Rank from NFL Network and NFL.com. And yeah, that seems to be something that gets built into a speech that is really, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You're looking at a speech that is basically you talking about how great you are while they're telling while all your fans are just telling you this is the moment of your greatest greatness, and then you have to somehow be self-deprecating and humorous, you know, and do some extra things. It's not an easy task. I thought Brett Favre cried, like, too much. I thought he cried a little.
Right.
He was choked up. And then especially when he had mentioned how his family doesn't like crybabies and no one was crying. And then,
right,
you know, sometimes they would flash to the family members during the speech. For Brett's family specifically, none of them were crying, only him. So it was, I thought it was.
You know who the real MVP was, though? There was somebody in there in the Atlanta Falcons Brett Favre jersey. And I said, you know what? I would probably be best friends with that guy. Whoever that person is was amazing.
That is the oldest old school Brett Favre jersey. Unless you go back to the high school days, I'm sure Mitchell and Ness are making one of those. And you bring up,
I'm sure,
yeah,
Eddie DeBartolo. And here's what he did. Yes, and he can do it because, and this is part of that whole, not, you know, blending entertainment with education with a little bit of history. And so he was telling the stories of those great iconic, you know, NFL football players that were part of the those 49er teams that, you know, that he ran, owned, whatever. And he did. I felt like Jerry Rice, he had mentioned, for those people that didn't get a chance to see it, I'm sure it's looping on the network as we speak. He had mentioned that when he came into camp, he had a very tall hairstyle. I would liken it to a Kid and Play.
Right, exactly. Kind of
hairstyle. And that the other players called him Fifi.
Well, Kid and Play's 2 different people.
Yeah.
Right. Then it would be either Kid or Play, whoever sported that.
Whichever one.
Right.
One, yeah.
But yeah, so he mentioned that. And I couldn't tell if, I mean, it's all in good fun, but I think Jerry was like, that wasn't something he wanted, you know, out there.
I could probably guarantee you he did not want that out there at all. A lot of these guys, listen, most of these guys, when you go out there, like, it's really cool because a lot of these guys, they've been away from the game long enough, and then maybe people stop, like, not remembering who they are, you know? So when somebody wants to come in and talk to them and things like that, they're very gracious. They're happy to talk to you and everything like that. Although one time I did corner Harry Carson. And I said, hey, your Super Bowl in 86, do you feel like it's not really fulfilling because you never got a chance to play the Bears? You know, that Charles Martin took out Jim McMahon, and we never got to go mano a mano. And he's like, no, it didn't bother me. I'm like, yes, it did. You know, but, okay, maybe Harry Carson doesn't like me that much. But the one guy, like one of the guys who just you cannot fool with any in any way, shape, or form is Jerry Rice. And to see him get skewered like that, yes. I was appreciative of it. I don't care for him.
But Adam, too, and on the other side, you know, you recognize because I think you have a little bit of latitude, right, to poke fun because he's, you know, arguably the greatest receiver of all time, one of the greatest 49ers. Mm-hmm. So it's not as though, you know, he's sitting there saying, yeah, that's right. I'm a nod loser, right? That's not. And plus, he did poke fun at his Dancing with the Stars, you know, notoriety as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff going on. It's like, and Eddie DeBartolo was the owner. He was the guy writing the paycheck. So, of course, he's got a little bit of latitude to work there and kind of say things that the common folk like us would not be able to tell Jerry Rice. And he's on TV, so he just has to take it.
Yeah, he's got to take that shot.
You really can't. You can't really look too upset because you got to wear it right there.
Right, and you know this is Eddie's moment, right? And so if that's something that he remembers, and he seems to be smiling while he's saying it, so this is a fond memory for him. We're talking with Adam Rank from NFL Network and NFL.com. When we come back, he's going to hold through the break. Hopefully, Adam, you can do that. We're going to break down some of the other speeches, the event itself, and talk a little NFL Network when we come back. It's Dane in for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN.
Love it.
Nice. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberi to my right and on the line, a guy with his hand on the pulse of all things NFL is NFL Network and NFL.com's Adam Rank. Adam, welcome back to the station. I wonder, and maybe you're privy to some of this as far as the thought process on the grouping or the order of the speakers. Did they know? Cause I'm sure they tell everybody it's 8 to 10 minutes, I think, right? Or do they, because you wouldn't have, if you have Brett Favre first, like everybody.
Right. Right. You don't want to be the guy right after that 36-minute speech.
And all the fans have left. Or did they? Well, no, right? Because
he's all done. We got to go now.
The crowd was so big. Like, do they designate when they either let people in or, and there some are wearing jerseys, so you can tell, but who's like there? Because if the crowd is all Packer fans, I guess you want Brett Favre to go last, right? So that everybody stays.
Absolutely. They do have a pecking order. Like if you're going to see a comedy show or something like that, you know, they are going to have. They're going to have it stacked. They're going to have somebody compelling a little bit early, Ken Stabler was. What's that?
You mentioned the comedy thing. In my mind, I'm thinking, yes, you have Louis Anderson go last.
Yeah, you know, you got Louis C.K. or somebody who's a headliner. And, of course, you're not giving them the 8-minute light, like, hey, get off the
warm-up act.
You're like, okay, yeah, he's going late. We're going to allow this to happen, which is expected with Brett Favre. You knew that one was going to be going well over a half an hour. So there is a pecking order and you kind of do the ebbs and flows and you know who the quiet guys are and you know who the guys are going to have great anecdotes. And so I thought they did a pretty good job of spacing it out and getting the, I was surprised. I don't think I'd ever heard Marvin Harrison talk before. So that was kind of a rare treat. You're like, oh, this guy talked. Like, who knew? Or Orlando Pace, who was like surprisingly good. You're like, oh, okay, cool.
Surprisingly good as they break it down. Now, is this the truth? Because they had said that whoever was kind of wrangling them backstage or organizing them, they had Marvin Harrison go first because they were afraid he was a flight risk. So if he saw other people talking, that he would just disappear.
He's gone. Where'd Marvin go?
Everybody's talking. He's out of here. Yeah. I thought his presentation was going to be somebody going like, I didn't see nothing. I don't know. Did he play for the Colts? I don't know. You're not, I'm not saying that. You're not getting any of that out of me. He went to Syracuse. I don't know. Ask him. Don't ask me. I didn't see nothing. No, that was the thing. I think they just had it. Yeah. And I think that's the one thing. Everybody's talking about Brett Favre going for 36 minutes. Like, I think Marvin Harrison spoke for 8 minutes, I think, in his entire NFL career, that nobody had ever talked about him or nobody had even – he had never talked for 8 consecutive minutes. So I thought that was a pretty big milestone.
People who had known him his entire playing career, and Peyton Manning is one of those guys, said, like, the overrunner, and he said, including all the applause, because there's certainly, like, I say something, I'd like to thank my grade school teacher. And then, you know, there's at least 20 seconds of clapping, and then they stand up, or that's my wife over there. And then there's, like, 30 seconds of clapping. He said it would be about 9 minutes, including the clapping.
and the applause breaks and everything like that. Right. Yeah, he spaced it out. Yeah, he was going for the cheap pops and the ones where he knew he could milk 20 seconds out of it and not have to say anything. I thought he did pretty well. So I was frustrating to see. It brings back too many bad memories. I know we talked about it moments ago, but it's like it's still too fresh.
You still see that. Reggie Wayne running down the middle of the field with no one on him?
Oh my goodness gracious! Just one time, man. Nobody can make a play. I can't even think. I can't even, the whole thing too. I remember one time. Lance Briggs was at the NFL Network. I probably shouldn't be name dropping like that. I apologize. I remember one time George Clooney told me the other day, he said, Adam, never name drop because it's unsightly and it's not, you don't want to do that. So I apologize for that. But Briggs was in there. And of course, I'm going on and on about, first of all, Devin Hester's touchdown and like just telling a story about it. And I was finally like, how did you lose the Super Bowl to Peyton Manning? And he's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, everybody feels that way. It's crazy. Like, I've always been, like, great regular season quarterback. Anybody who wants to play fantasy football, he's amazing. I'm like, but, dude, he's not good in the playoffs. And I kid you not, like, every former NFL player that I come in contact with, I'll eventually corner them and ask them this question. And there was one of them, one of our analysts was here the other day, and I was like, dude, what do you think? I know, because I'll give away too much because I don't want to put these guys out there because they're telling me this in confidence. But they're all like, yeah, the Bears shouldn't have lost that game. Like, how did you lose to Peyton? I'm like, that's what I'm saying.
It's strange that you mentioned Peyton Manning because, you know, he's up there as one of those guys that even though he's just, you know, off of his last Super Bowl, of course, with Trent Dilfer like numbers, that he was, oh, nothing against, does Trent Dilfer work for the network? I'm sorry and I apologize. No, either way, we've been kind of.
ESPN, you can say whatever you want about it. Right.
Okay, so we've been kind of, I don't want to say bagging on him, but it's kind of like DeBartolo with Jerry Rice. You know, there's been so much success. I think you can, you know, take a few fun observations or jabs at Peyton Manning is that he may, you know, over the course of the 5 years, he may kind of balloon up with the Papa John. He may be the first one who does the speech at the Hall of Fame and then Papa John's like shows up on stage with him, or he mentions the, you know, how much he likes Budweiser 3 or 4 times during his speech. He may do that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like I wonder how many plugs he's going to be able to get in. He'll probably be selling like advertising on his gold jacket. He might have a big like Papa John's,
put bunch of patches on the yellow jacket.
That's right.
Like it makes it look like a Sons of Anarchy cut or something like that. It's like, hey, look at me. Sponsored by Bud Light.
My son will be like, why don't the other guys have so many patches? Well, you know, this is.
I'll have a ball cap on. Yeah, he'll be doing it all. Yeah, he's shameless. I feel like he deserved. No, he doesn't. No, he does. What am I saying? He robbed us of that, of a Rex Grossman Super Bowl championship. So that's.
Oh, we've had too many Rex Grossman references tonight.
But Adam is right because, you know, think of the entertainment we would have because there would be Rex Grossman, you know, doing, you know, Chrysler Plymouth ads. You know, he would be doing like Oldsmobile commercials. He would be out with, you know, at his favorite pizza place. We'd be seeing a lot more Rex Grossman had they won a Super Bowl.
Oh, good Lord. We saw enough of him on the sideline when he was here.
Speaking of that, Adam, and this is one of the things.
Lou Malnati's just handed out pies all the time.
He would be more like Jack's frozen pizza.
There it is.
Like a Red Baron.
Red Baron.
There's a pecking order. Red Baron. Yeah, Lou's is a little too good. A little too good. But, you know, when you think of those shows, like I love A Football Life, right, where you take anybody mm-hmm. from someone that's sort of – that's either a coaching figure or someone that's in and around the game to, you know, some of the star players or kind of some of those did-you-knows. You know, how do you guys determine – certainly there's a team photo of obvious ones, right, where there's a lot of either interest or these were great players or something important. But how do you decide on some of those more obscure ones where, you know, like a Rex Grossman?
If it's, oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
That'd be about a 30-second spot.
I've pitched that one. I wanted to pitch that whole thing and just be like the Rex Grossman story. Just break down that game. I want to just break down what happened. The bedlam that happened after that between the Devin Hester touchdown return and what eventually unfolded. Oh, like the God. One Super Bowl where it rains, you're like, you gotta be.
Yeah.
This is not happening.
No.
I think there's a lot, there's a lot of cool stories around, and I think it just comes down to people pitching things. I do want to pitch this Rex Grossman thing now. That's a great idea.
Where are they now?
Guys, don't worry about it. Yeah, where are they now? But yeah, they just we've got a great wealth of storytellers, and of course working with NFL Films, who I don't think anybody does a better job than they do of telling stories. Yeah. And just going through and searching it out. And I know one of our editors, Alex Gelhar, is working on a story right now about the Dome Patrol, the famed Saints linebacking corps, who our defensive coordinator was the linebackers coach. And so, you know, there's a lot of cool stories like that that still need to be unearthed. One of the things I really have been behind over the last couple of years is Kenny Washington, who broke the modern NFL color barrier. I'm sure you heard Tony Dungy allude to Fritz Pollard today as the first African-American head coach, first African-American quarterback back in the 20s. But then there was a color ban for a while. And then when the Rams moved to Los Angeles back in 46, the Coliseum Commission would only allow them to move out here if the team was integrated. And so the league had to be integrated. And Kenny Washington, who is a star at UCLA, who is a teammate of Jackie Robinson, came up, you know, he was the guy in LA who broke the color barrier. And his name is largely forgotten in the sports world and in NFL circles and everything like that. So that's something that I've been working on, trying to pitch a football life, trying to get the LA Rams, now that they've returned to the City of Angels, trying to get them on board. Hopefully they'll retire his number in the near future, and that can get the ball rolling that maybe someday he will even be recognized in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So it really just comes down to people just trying to have a story to tell and then going through the different avenues of trying to get that presented to the masses.
Well, we love the fact that the NFL Network exists. And, you know, outside of all of the stuff that happens between the lines during the season, being able to kind of share all those stories, share all those personalities, share all of that history, right? And with NFL Films, and you mentioned it as well, put some of that amazing footage to great use and let people see it on a regular basis. Before we let you go, Adam, and we're going to get to news right now, like let people know how they can follow you on Twitter or Facebook or stalk you or catch up all your adventures or even Jay.
Find out about Rex Grossman, where he is now.
You know, if you want to swap some Rex Grossman stories, you can call me at, no, I'm just kidding. Hit me up on Twitter at Adam Rank. Or facebook.com/AdamRank. And, you know, and I'm happy to discuss anything. I also, I'm involved heavily in fantasy football too. So for the next couple of months, I will probably be answering start sit questions, but I'm happy to talk about anything at any time. So
thanks
so much for having me on, by the way. I love being on.
Oh, no, it was great. Thanks so much for sharing all this stuff with your hand on the pulse of all that is NFL and your thoughts on today's ceremony. It's Adam Rank from NFL Network and NFL.com. Thanks for being on the show and get some sleep.
No, thank you. Thanks, so Adam. Much. The pleasure was all on this side of the phone.
All right. Thanks, man. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 3 a.m. and here's Roger Badish.
Composer Roger Badish.
That's,
you
know,
you see
what?
Me conducting up there?
Right? I mean, just, it is the kind of thing that people have. I don't know if it's a love affair or if it's just this kind of strange familiarity, right? Where you just, you know.
That's one of those songs you just, as soon as you hear it.
Well, that's Joey. He's doing a master. He's the maestro.
That's right.
In there. But just the music makes you think, you know, I want to say torches, but that sounds like a mob chasing Frankenstein. But I mean. Or killing the Zika.
Wow, how'd that go?
Well, I'm just saying, you think the torches. But you think, national pride. You think all of these odd and obscure sports that you would never normally watch. Like, well, I'll watch someone.
Like the ping pong.
Or the 10-meter air rifle. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, Roger, you know, for Olympic, do you just follow, support, and watch the kind of those main, the track and field ones, those are so big, or the gymnastics? Do you watch, what's your favorite Olympic sport in the summer?
Wow, good question. I like the whole pageantry of the whole thing. I love seeing an underdog, suddenly bursting onto the scene and scoring their best score ever, or somebody who's like tops in their field. Like there was the the medley, the women's medley, where the world record holder set another world record. I love seeing that burst of individuality come forth in any sporting event, and especially during the Olympics. Now, I don't watch it like I used to watch it when I was a lot younger.
Because of the Zika?
No, no. Oh, look, there's a mosquito. Wait, don't move on the rings. There's a mosquito on your shoulder. No. No, not because of the Zika, even though I'm still waiting for him to go swimming out in the ocean.
Wait till the boats.
Yeah, that's going to be not fun to watch. Don't tip over. I don't know why. I see, back in the day when I was younger than when you guys were younger, if that made sense. I was trying to be nice. It was every 4 years.
Isn't it still?
For both the summer. No, oh, now it's every 2 years.
Yeah, they split it up.
So when I was very young, the summer and winter Olympics were both every 4 years, the same year.
Right.
Now it's, hey, you know, we don't want to go that long now. We got to do it every 2 years. So we'll do summer now and
winter in 2 years.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so... I like it. I think the build up before it was just too much. I was tired of hearing about the bodies in the water and Zika mosquitoes and the people getting robbed and all. I'm like, you know, this is not the Olympics I remember.
Well, there's more to that, Roger. As apparently somebody, I don't know what event it was. I think he was in the water. Hit a couch that was inside in the body of water he was in, and ended up, I don't know, disqualifying or something happened to him.
I saw that. He was a kayak. He was in a kayak, and he tipped over.
Tipped over because he had a couch that was in the water.
You know, he was tired. He wanted to sit down and take a rest. Look, it's a floating couch.
I understand. You can't change. You can't clean up, you know, everything. But you think you could clean up the space around the kayak? Maybe even have, you know, like in curling where you've got those brush guys out front.
Right,
you've got like a path clear.
Do you want to know how many pool guys are out of work because people can't afford their pools anymore with this economy? Send them all down to Rio and have them out there with their nets cleaning the water.
Even if it's just a little ahead of the kayak guy, you know, where you're just out there like kind of running interference.
Right, just, you know, clearing the way.
Yeah, right.
There's a hashtag kayak sofa trending on Twitter.
There it is.
Now, you know, as many challenges as we, I think this just compounds just it's not necessarily the funny, but maybe like the tragically funny because what compounds it is like, this is the Olympics that could have been here. And as many challenges as we have, we don't have like the couches in the waterways.
No, we don't. It's, you know, are you guys both born and bred Chicagoans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I am.
All right.
Yeah, for my child. Yes.
I'm a few years older than you guys, but I remember back. It's got to be in the 50s, and I researched this one, and of course I've forgotten more than I know in life right now. But we used to have the Pan American Games here one year back in the late 50s, and I remember my folks got tickets for one day, and I remember going to Soldier Field with my folks. It was a very hot day, and we watched events in the field. Now, that's the gist of my memory of the whole event, of the whole day. I don't remember the events. I don't know who won. But it was crowded. The place was packed. All of downtown was jammed up with people. Now, could you imagine if we brought the full Olympics? And not just downtown, but now you've got these stadiums out in the suburbs. And you know they would have been put into use for things. You know, the soccer stadiums.
The velodrome.
The velodrome. Where would that have been at the car racing stadium that they got?
Chicagoland Speedway.
Speedway, that would have, you know, would they have converted that into a velodrome for the bikes? You know, where would all of this have taken place? And now people, it's bad enough traffic rush hour in Chicago during the week. And forget rush hour, the weekends of people trying to get to all the different things. We already get the warnings up here about, you know, the Sox are playing, there's a concert on the lake, there's a soccer parade. Game, there's this, and it's all letting out at the same time, and the traffic is just jammed up. Can you imagine the Olympics going on while downtown and where everyone else works during the week? It just wouldn't have been able to happen.
I think we know, based on, you know, the stories as people kind of break down just the economic debacle, not that we can absorb things like that here anyway, but I think we have the position to be able to not have to go through the Olympics ourselves, but kind of still look and say, hey, look how bad they're doing. You know, because it's like a comical.
I don't think any city that's hosted an Olympics in the past, I'll say 30 years, has made any money off of this thing.
No, I know Atlanta, they had their own challenges down there. And I know a couple of people actually one person in particular was there. And you know, she said that it was just. There's just people everywhere. The village was chaos. It's just all kinds of people. You couldn't go anywhere without everything was tied up. And it was just people everywhere. And
cats and dogs. Yeah, from the sky.
Exactly. I can't even imagine how you mentioned it down here. How nutty that would be.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I just had an idea, guys. What about Couchnado?
Flying couches coming out of the sea.
Kayaks beware.
And mama couch looking for a little baby hassocks, you know.
Where are my babies?
Canoes and couches. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Roger. And during the show, we're going to try to make sense of what the Olympics means, what it doesn't mean. Is it tragic entertainment now with the kayaks and the couches? And, of course, we've got the Zika. But then you've got all of these historical moments. When you bring the world together, something is going to happen. Some are going to be important moments that change history. We're going to go through some of those, and then also the 25 most inspiring Olympic moments of all time. I mean, some of the biggest kind of transformative moments in either, like, I don't want to say the country's history, but in the country's sports history. You talk about the Russians and the hockey in 1980. I mean,
right.
These were big deals. I mean, is the world so kind of big and informed and known? Has it become a small enough place where you just can't have those moments? And Roger, you mentioned it. I love those stories where you can find, and that's what the Olympics does. It brings the world together, so there's some significance, but you have these kind of stories of these individuals that you would never know otherwise, right? But then you get to know them. They do a lot of that backstory stuff where you can root for them with a little bit of kind of relevant information, and then see stars being born on a daily basis.
Right, and with the social media and everything now, it just blows up because you hear these stories so quickly. I mean, look, I mean, with that couch thing, back in the day, it would have been tape delayed 2 days from now. We might know that it happened. But now you know exactly when it happened.
Yeah, you learned about it before it happened.
Right.
You know.
And you guys mentioned tape delay. We're going to talk about that, too, as we did a little bit earlier with the NFL Hall of Fame ceremony, where they're taking what was kind of a functional event of electing people and turned it into really visual entertainment. The Olympics has always been that, but now they're expanding it. And I guess trying to turn it into, which it is, it's a reality show, but they're trying to really work to do that with some tape delay on the TV side.
Right, and it's, you know, there was a lot of criticism about all that. We'll get into that in a few minutes after we take a break or whatever it is we're doing right now.
Let's do that. 312-981-7200. Your thoughts on the Olympics so far, some of the things that you've seen, some of the things you hope to see or looking forward to. I know I'm going to make a point to watch a bunch of it. Hopefully I'll see another couch. I think that would be fun. 312-981.
It would be a big, great story if the couch won.
A personal world record by the couch.
Or the guy rides the couch.
Right. And he's got the paddle out. He's paddling the couch down the river.
Could you see the guy with the visor flipping pages? It doesn't say anything in here about couches.
Yeah, right.
Is it a lazy boy?
Still got your paddle.
312-981-7200. Olympics, your thoughts. Text them in, call them in, and we'll talk about it as well. It's staying in for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Daniel Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue on what is a beautiful weather night. In for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. I've got Dino Tiberi to my right. And we're talking a little bit about the Olympics, what it means, some of the storylines that come out of it. Sometimes it's, you know, transformative, inspirational, world-changing. Sometimes, you know, we meet some new people. And sometimes we get, you know, kind of a little bit more exposure for one of the health issues that's out there going on in the world now. And that has really been front and center as one of the main storylines with the Olympics is the Zika issue. We've got Patrick online. Patrick, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane, awesome. You're doing an awesome job tonight.
Thanks, Patrick.
I'd like to take this up with Roger, because Roger is a little bit older than me. I'm 47, and he's got a couple of kids, I'm guessing. He's not 19, 20, 21-year-olds as the Olympians are. There's, you know, that's a huge issue right now. I mean, you know, I think you guys are taking it lightly.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen any of the video that's been out there that what is going on with the kids that come out from with the Zika virus. You know, especially with the golfers, it's a no brainer with the golfers to me, you know, go to the Olympics and win a gold trophy or go win $250 to $1 million, whatever, you know, whatever it is right now. So it just happened to coincide with the Olympics that they have a huge ending, if I'm not mistaken, to their season. But the rest of the Olympians that have quit or I'm not necessarily quit, but just, you know, just said, they, hey, I'm not going, you know,
well,
again.
Yeah, Patrick, when it comes to the Zika issue, and you're right on a lot of that stuff as far as it is, I mean, it's a huge health risk and a health issue for the golfers or the Olympians that can decide not to come. That's one thing. But, you know, for the people that live down there, I mean, I saw some of the stories where people have decided, you know, they're just putting off having kids for like 2 years, like almost countrywide, where there's going to be an entire generation where there's a couple year gap without kids. And so they're dealing with it.
Okay, that's great. You can plan on that, but if you're not a guy like me and haven't had that accident happen, you know, I mean, if you don't know somebody that, hey, yeah, we're not planning on having kids in the next 2 years, but, oh, hey, you have one coming in the next 9 months, you know?
Right.
That's a thing, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't always work that way.
Well, Patrick, the upside of it.
Listen, if you're an Olympian, And okay, you're a guy, I'm a guy, but if you were a female, which is, again, it's not the carrier, but, you know, if you were a female, would you take that risk? I mean, that's a huge risk.
Yeah.
And I mean, the women that are doing it right now, man, hands up. I mean, that's a big risk. I mean, again, you know, hey, you're 20 years old now and you're thinking, well, I'm not going to get it. But if you get it and you have a kid when you're 30 and it happens, I mean, that is a huge. I mean, I actually have buried my daughter at 10 years old from something else that was, you know, it happened. My ex didn't carry the babies right. Twins. I lost a twin at birth and then lost the other at 10 years old.
Oh.
But that's that's a different story. But it sucked for me from the birth of the loss of a birth and then 10 years later to loss of my other. But to know that you could risk that, that's a huge load on your shoulders. So for you guys to be making fun of Roger, especially, he's even 10 years older, I'm guessing mine, you know, and for him to be like, oh, it's no big deal, no. It's not a big deal. It's a huge deal.
Yeah. You're right, Patrick, and you're raising the awareness of it, and thanks so much for the call and apologize for your loss. Yep.
No, don't worry about that. I mean, that happened because of different circumstances. And like you said, this is a circumstance that everybody's aware of.
Yep.
And for these Olympians to be going down there, I mean, like I said, the risk, that's a huge risk.
Yeah.
And again, it's already in Florida. the people in Chicago have already got it. You know, people that have gone to other places. And who's to say that a mosquito that bites that person in Chicago ain't going to pass it all the way up to Canada?
Nope, those are some good points. Thanks. That's thanks, Patrick. Scary, thanks. Man. Yeah,
you
thanks
guys,
for listening.
Again, Dane.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. Thanks for the call. I know that it is a little bit late, but, you know, I think one of the upsides, Dino, on this one is that if there is going to be an upside, you know, it's hard not to, you know, to look at all aspects and try to find it. You know, I know there's no humor in the Zika, but the but that it is kind of a main thing and the awareness has been raised. I mean, if this would be happening in, you know, in a smaller area that doesn't have the world's focus on it, I think they'll probably be closer to getting some cures and getting some treatment and everything because of, you know, all of the attention that's been
paid. There's a lot more awareness, obviously, with this being in such a global stage, you know, that all the athletes have, you know, all they make those decisions whether they're going to put themselves at risk or not. A lot of them didn't want to do it, and, you know, I certainly respect that. It's like any other virus, you know, they're just trying to find a cure and see what we can do.
You know, and I apologize to the caller. I wasn't making fun of the athletes down there. I was pointing out the problems that Rio is having with the Olympics, as many other cities who have had the Olympics in the past have had major problems. Look at the air quality in China when they had the Olympics over there. A lot of issues that really should not be the forefront of the story. The forefront of the story should be the accomplishments of the people participating. And the caller brought up a good point. He said a lot of the golfers, a lot of the other athletes, but those are the professional athletes. I haven't heard any of the amateur athletes who have said, I'm not going to the Olympics. This is a once-in-a-lifetime event for many of them.
Yeah, it's a life changer. You know? If you're a track and field person, I mean, this is where not only you realize all the dreams that you've worked in, these people, they, you know, work since they're mm-hmm. you know, teenagers or even younger sometimes, you know, nonstop to get to that point where you can realize your dreams once every 4 years. I mean, you only have this tiny window of opportunity to either, you know, fulfill your dreams and realize all of your athletic expectations or even make a career. I mean, you look at people like, you know, your Michael Phelps or your Usain Bolts. I mean, these are superstars now based on participating in the Olympics. I don't know that there's any professional swimming. Is there, Dino?
No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, there's probably some kind of stipend or something they get. If they get a gold medal, they get a certain amount of money now, but I don't even know how that works.
The professionals, people coming out of track and field, usually going into football, where their talents can be used on a professional basis. Swimming, there is no professional swimming. Everything's amateur. There's no pro leagues. The same with water polo. There is. I'm watching the replay of the beach volleyball. There is a professional beach volleyball circuit that's out there. So there's money on that. But most of the events, most of the sports that are in the Olympics, it's an Olympic sport.
Yeah, I think the important thing to notice, too, is that, you know, these are these moments and times for these athletes, and they're caught kind of in this situation where it's just another challenge that they're having to deal with. Some of it should have been avoided, right? There shouldn't be couches and bodies in the waterways,
right?
And, you know, or bad air in China. And some of it is just, you know, an unfortunate situation with a virus like Zika. That should not be the headline. That should not be the focus. But unfortunately, you know, until the next couch comes by, it is, right?
Yeah. And again, they've had how far in advance? I know that the 2020 games are already set.
I think it was a long time ago, Roger. They should have known to get those couches out. In fact, I doubt that couch has been there this whole time. Someone probably dumped it in there saying, hey, I know we're going to be doing the Olympics, but I just don't want this couch anymore.
There was just a lot of stuff with this one going up to it that they were late on and everything else, and it just seemed like they were so unorganized. We'll see how it all plays out over the next couple of weeks.
Yes. There'll be some amazing transformative moments, inspiring moments, and probably some really crazy ones that you have to see to believe. But right now, talking about being late, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. It is 3:30. It's news time. Here's Roger Battish. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. today. Dave is having a well-deserved day off. Maybe he's taking a family truckster vacation. You never know. He's a very private guy. You know.
Yeah, it might be time to do it. It's a great time right now in the summer to do it. Right before if kids are going back to school, there are a lot of people out there trying to get their last-minute vacations in.
Yeah, we want to do that. So 312-981-7200 if anybody has suggestions. If anybody has, you know, ideas of places to stay away from, whether it's the world's largest ball of twine, whether it's Wall Drug, whether it's the dinosaur village that's a little, or those caverns.
The mud caves.
Mud caves. Those things right now. But, of course, from, you know, for the next at least, like, week or so or 2 weeks or however long it happens to take, it may take longer, right, if there's kind of holdups based on any couch-related or dead body-related situations going on.
Exactly.
At the Rio Olympics, that could be a long road trip. I think you could probably take a – is it all connected somehow, I think, right, to the Yucatan Peninsula and then all the way down?
We're getting a geography lesson today.
Either way, the Olympics brings the world together. And sometimes you come up with transformative moments, sometimes inspiring moments, and I've got some of those. Okay, so 13 Olympic moments that changed history. It's not going to be a quiz question, Dino, and I think you've got it in front of you, so you don't. But you want to, like, suggest some that changed history?
Well, I mean, on this list, the one that jumps out at me is Jesse Owens, you know, back in 1936 over in Berlin. You know, he...
Breaks records,
and you know Hitler wanted to use that Olympics as a
to show the supremacy of his
exactly
his individuals there, and of course that just kind of blew that out of the water. And this was before, and that does happen. I think I don't know that any of that's happening right now in the Rio situation, but sometimes the Olympics is kind of a proxy way for either countries to fight against each other or to make a statement against each other. You look at the 84 Olympics. Wasn't that the one that was, it was in Los Angeles, and didn't the Russians boycott that? And didn't we boycott the 80 Olympics?
Right. It went back and forth of both of those Olympics where both countries boycotted each other. And, you know, this thing about, with Jesse Owens was interesting because he ended up befriending one of his German competitors in the events, and so wasn't what Hitler was looking at when he set it all up.
When you've got an evil, genocidal dictator trying to tear the world apart, that sports and the Olympics in particular can bring the world and its peoples together.
That's right.
So I don't have your list in front of me.
Oh, Roger, you want to?
But I've got two.
Okay. Now these are the
One of them along the same lines.
Okay.
The Mexico Olympics with the Black Power Salute.
Yeah, that's on the list, Roger.
It is?
Yep, the civil rights protests in 68.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That was major. And then another formative moment, not along those lines whatsoever, but the first 10, I think, in gymnastics. Nadia Comaneci.
Oh,
is that on the list?
No, it's not on the list.
It's not.
It may be in one of the 25 most inspiring Olympic moments, but the ones that changed history, no, you're right.
I gotcha. Okay.
The Mexico City 1968, the civil rights protests. At the height of the civil rights movement in the U.S., black American athletes were encouraged to boycott the games. Instead, African American sprinters John Carlos and Tommy Smith staged a nonviolent protest by raising their fists in a Black Power salute while the national anthem played during their medal ceremony.
Although they both wore black gloves, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a little thought into this.
Mm-hmm.
Although they were consequently suspended from the Olympic Village, their silent demonstration brought the American battle over civil rights to the international stage. And we talked about it, whether it's world politics, right, where countries are either boycotting or making statements or trying to prove their supremacy, you know, outside of a general war scenario, that you have situations like this where people are making statements, social statements, civil rights statements, but using the Olympics as that kind of world platform.
Yeah, that's our forum.
Yeah.
Paris in 1900, I know that, Roger, that was probably one of the other ones you were thinking of, which was the first female athletes. Women were never allowed to compete in the Olympics until the Paris Games in 1900, when their participation in lawn tennis and golf events secured a position for female athletes in future games. And they've got her playing lawn tennis. She has a racket, and she has a big bonnet and a dress that goes all the way to the floor.
Yeah, I didn't see
not a lot of freedom of movement in there.
See Serena Williams.
No
wearing
gym
one of
shorts
those.
There, I guess. Huh? They, for women, they hadn't invented those yet, I guess.
Apparently
I don't know.
Not.
Yeah. Oh, another one comes to mind. The Munich Olympics. Is that on the list?
Yep.
The attack on the Israeli delegation.
See, that's it. I mean, Munich in 1972, terror replaces peace, and the tragedy infamously marred the Munich Games when 11 Israeli athletes were taken hostage and killed by Palestinian terrorists. Although the Olympics continued and the incidents led to increased security, the message of international peace promoted by the Games is permanently damaged. And see, that's one of the things, too, is where people are using, you know, whether it's sometimes for, I think, good purposes, but outside of what is, you know, the general things that happen at the Games, which is athletic contests, you know, that show either people working together or people overcoming obstacles or just people being good at whatever event it is that sometimes you have people trying to use the Olympics either to do something that I think we would look at as positive, whether it's in the civil rights sense. Or negative, right? Because it's the world stage, and you know you're going to get a lot of publicity. Of course, that was long before, you know, your social media, Dina, you brought up the fact that, like, now you know, the couch has its own Twitter handle.
Yeah, they're, you know, if that would have been back then, you know, that social media is like it is today, you know, that stuff would have been out right away, and everyone would have known about it. But, you know, again, then you had to wait for Jim McKay to tell you that it was a tragic event that occurred, and, you know, you didn't have that as it happened. Instance like you do now.
From the 815, Billy Mills, look at Mills. Is he on your list? So that was somebody who had suggested one of the Olympic moments. And of course, you can do that too. 312-981-7200 to add either, you know, some of your favorite moments. It doesn't have to be earth shattering and historical, but some of the ones that, that made an impact on you. So you've got Sydney in 2000, North and South Korea unite. These are two countries that
really don't like each other.
Apparently, right. And working together in a short-lived moment of alliance, North and South Korea marched together for the first time in Sydney's opening ceremony. Rather than carry their respective national flags, the North and South Korean teams in identical uniforms joined hands and waved a unification flag featuring a blue map of Korea. Now, could you imagine, like, based on, like, what's going on now, that happening today? No.
Nah, there's no chance. Not a chance of that happening. And, you know, that was historical event. You don't see that. You probably won't see that happen again for quite a while. But you know, there were a couple other ones. You know, the pros playing in the Olympics in '92 in basketball, when they had the dream team, and you know, they had never had professional players before that. It was always amateur players, and then they decided they didn't like getting beat in an Olympics, so they were going to bring in the dream team with Michael Jordan and the rest of the guys. Back in '92, that was another one of the iconic moments. Well, that was the first time that they had allowed that professional athletes in basketball had played for the U.S. Even though the other countries were already had been doing it all along.
Well, you mentioned it on like the kind of the intended, you know, events that are there as far as on the sports side. But like, yeah, so that was definitely one. We brought up the 1980s Olympic. Roger brought up the 10. You know, on the gymnastics, you know, side, you've got those kind of, we all remember some of those gymnastics, like a Carrie Strug, right?
Oh, right. They just had something in Sports Illustrated, the Where Are They Now issue that they had put together, and they brought all the Olympians back from that Olympics, you know, and just kind of described what they were doing now and what, you know,
what are they doing?
Yeah, they're all doing.
They're all with Rex Grossman.
Oh, jeez.
Another interception.
And it's really sad that another athlete in gymnastics snapped his leg.
Yeah, the French guy today on the vault.
Yeah.
That was unreal. He comes down and his leg was...
Just collapsed.
Yeah.
Was it like a Joe Theismann?
Yeah, it was. It was bad. I mean, the video I saw on the internet was...
It wasn't necessarily anything he did bad.
No, he just landed.
Yeah.
It just
collapsed on him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That'll be on the Tosh.0 show. Yeah,
I'm sure.
He's a very humorous guy, but he always shows people either throwing up or the compound fractures, which is...
No, that's going to be one of them, then.
Well, you can tell that won't be one of the 25 most inspiring Olympic moments we'll talk about after this break. We'll have Roger and Dino as well. It's Dane in for Dave Plyer until 5 on 720 WGN. Great. 720 WGN. Dane Neal in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. We don't know where Dave is. This is, but we know where the classic rock album is. It's in the production.
It's in that bumper right there. That's fantastic. The Who.
That's pretty awesome. We played the Olympic theme during one, you know, when we first came in to talk about this segment, and some of the most inspiring moments. Flipping through the list here, some are inspiring, some are just kind of like oddities. You know, like the, I guess, is the Jamaican bobsled team, was that an inspiring moment, or was
well,
that?
Well, it inspired a movie. It did. John Candy was in that movie.
That's excellent. Okay, excellent point. Yes, I agree. The and then we've got let's say the Carrie Strug thing. We brought that up. You know, that's where she broke her or hurt her foot. And then you know, Mary Lou Retton.
Yeah, the first gymnast, male or female, to win an Olympic gold.
The first one
in 1984. I thought somebody would have had it before that.
But. And she was great, you know, on a Wheaties box. And I think it just meant that we weren't really any good at that sport up until then.
Apparently, that was the first time we won.
But you wonder, there's certain things that become, whether it's individuals that, you know, we've talked about it, Roger brought, you know, stars are born and then they become kind of part of the public consciousness, you know, that we know. Like, I still know who Mary Lou Retton is. I haven't forgotten that.
Well, I think she was in one of the Naked Gun movies, if I remember right, in the awards ceremony where she comes bounding down the aisle doing backflips.
I'm sure that'll be, it's probably in her bio somewhere.
Absolutely.
But you think about some of the things that the Olympics have brought us as far as great quotes that, you know, like, do you believe in miracles? Right.
Yeah.
You know, that you brought up the, was it, it's not red buttons. Is it Dick Buttons?
Dick Button, my heart is Dick in my button. Mouth. Yeah.
For skating. Yeah.
Yeah. He nice was, skating. He's been, it was around for a long time.
You've got some moves that get named based on just how great that you're, like the Hamel Camel, right? From
I got one.
What's that?
All the right. Fosbury Flop.
Oh, the high jump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's right.
I haven't heard of that. You know, and of course, Dorothy Hamill. And you have hair, like even hairstyles. Didn't she bring Short and Sassy?
Right. Yeah, she had the Hamill haircut. Yeah, that's right.
It seemed
yeah.
like all the gymnasts, or other than gymnasts, certainly had those short haircuts too. But yeah, that was for figure skating. That was something that was iconic back in the day with her winning the gold medal.
Moves like the Triple Lindy.
Triple Sow Cow, whatever yeah, the heck
right.
that is.
Everything was a triple. That was the big deal.
Triple
you know,
Lutz.
double is like, you know, yesterday's news. Who's doing the triple? And then when they don't land it, that was the big, oh, everyone, ooh.
Yeah, Dick Button. Yeah. Oh, just missed on that last spin.
Did you see? He got the inside blade.
Well, see, but I mean, guys like that with their kind of dramatic readings and speakings, they add that extra element of drama and mystery, yeah. right?
And everybody's just watching it. I watched figure skating and gymnastics for years. I mean, it was just one of those things where you had to sit and watch that because it's part of the Olympics. And when they won, they were, you know, those people stood out like sore thumbs, like the first one ever to win. Mary Lou Retton because of that.
And how many times have you watched the Olympics where something like that has happened and you're watching it at home and you stand up and cheer, or you're like pumping your fist when you know they've taken first and you know it was a tight race, or the points were real close, or something like that. It's that kind of a feeling that we live vicariously through these great athletes.
And you wonder how it doesn't really leak into, like, everybody seems to be fine and very comfortable just kind of visiting these sports and all of the pageantry and the drama every 4 years. I don't know that it translates into, maybe somebody's watching it and then they become a figure skater. It's never worked for me. But Roger, you're right. I mean, I'll watch the gymnastics. I'll watch the...
And then you don't see it again for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, next month I'm not, you know, going on, you know, the Figures to Gain channel.
Yeah, and the ESPN, right. The Ocho, watching the gymnastics league.
And another great moment, the U.S. hockey team.
Well,
winning the gold medal.
We brought that up, and that is one of those. Mary Lou Retton, I guess that's probably pretty big, right? The first gold medal. We know about it, right? We're talking about it. But but when you can, especially when, you know, the world, the Russians were like this, you know, and the world was a different place, right? You had communism and the Cold War, and that was a way that we could be. And this was one, and as far as like your underdogs, right? This was a team that did not belong beating them, and to have that happen, one of the greatest upsets in the world, right?
As far it was, no one thought that the U.S. had a chance. In fact, you know, going into the Olympics before they even got there, they had played an exhibition against the Russians in New York City and got absolutely steamrolled. So they went going into that, they thought they had no chance. And for that team to come through and get that win and then go on and get the gold medal was, you know, that's why that's the number one moment of all time.
Well, guys, sometimes you can't just leave great moments to chance. You can't just allow them to just happen organically, you know, just by chance, you know, just happen. You know, you sometimes you need to manipulate it a little bit. And I guess that's what they're doing. NBC is criticized for tape delay of the Olympics opening ceremony, and they're patronizing to women because, you know, they're people too, and they buy products, and they're trying to make, I guess, the Olympics and the opening ceremony a little more interesting. Joey, like, you printed off this story, like, what has been some of the criticism? Is it because they're trying to either manipulate, you know, what should be just, hey, let's record what's going on, and trying to turn it into, build in maybe some extra drama, like a reality show?
Well, first off, it's a little more difficult now with Twitter when you sign a multi-billion dollar deal with NBC that you want to do tape delay when all the reporters are there live and tell
and
you that, look, there's a sofa. but I think what was the biggest takeaway of that criticism was from what John Miller said of NBC. He's the Olympics chief marketing officer, and he goes, "The people who are watching the Olympics are not particularly sports fans. More women watch the games than men, and for the women, they're less interested in the result and more interested in the journey." He goes on to say, it's sort of like, as you mentioned, ultimately a reality show and miniseries wrapped up into one. And tell the truth, it's been the complaint of many sports writers. And he just goes on to kind of make an excuse for the tape delay of, oh, we want to cater to women, but then kind of degrades them in the same way by saying, we're going to cater to them because, of course, they don't like sports, and of course,
although
we want to make it a reality show. And
right.
Yeah, it was the complete wrong way to go about it, and I don't know if they're just trying to cover themselves and trying to figure out how to get out of this this tape delay issue. But it was just so ill-advised, and for someone that high to say that, it was pretty low.
What a crazy way. I mean, you could just say, like, hey, we're just trying to find more ways to present it in different and unique ways that may appeal to other people in other new and exciting way, you know, however you're going to say it. But to just say, like, well, women watch, they watch it, they don't know what's going on, so we decided to just do what we want.
We took it over. Yeah, and it's, I'm reading here, it's 8 commercial breaks in the first hour of the ceremony frustrated viewers Friday night. One viewer joked on Twitter that the West Coast has waited so long on NBC's delay, it's now actually Michael Phelps' 6th Olympics.
Well, I don't know if it's NBC that does this. I think it might be, but I got roped into watching because I think of an office pool that my wife was in, the Bachelorette show.
Oh,
you
boy.
Know, when you talk about just mindless and completely unnecessary reality programming.
don't tell those people that. The women love that show.
Oh, no, it's nothing against, it's against anybody. And I was watching it, not on purpose. I was forced to as a hostile witness. But like, when you have that be, and I guess it's popular, people were watching it. Oh, geez, Louise! It was just the crazy. It was just horrible. Just watching people have arguments, and then have like kind of made up conversations, and then this lady's dating 14 guys, one of which is Aaron Rodgers' brother.
Well, and he ended up winning the whole thing, as I found out as I watched the last episode.
Yeah,
with Dawn,
so you watched
day.
It too?
Yep, I got. Well, we watched not live. I watched the recording of it, but still. But by then, there'd already been all kinds of stuff on social media that was going on behind the scenes, and you know, everyone pretty much knew before we watched it. So I'm like,
I thought
why
that
were we watching
no,
this?
It's the same thing, Dino. Is when, because Esther was looking at all the different sites and all the blog sites to see who really won, so she kind of already knew. And I'm thinking, that's wonderful. We don't need to watch it then. But instead,
alas, you did.
Yeah, you have arguments about, like, why didn't you ask my father for my hand in marriage? I'm like, well, because there's like 4 other dudes that are involved in this, and that's unsettling. I don't know.
Yeah, that was something else. But the fact that they just taped the latest, I mean, to me, it was, I always thought it was all live. And boy, did they have me fooled, boy. Well, I haven't watched all of it. I mean, we watched a little bit of it that we recorded. I didn't realize it was taped delayed until I was on online and I saw it.
It's like Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, all that kind of stuff.
It's all wrecked.
Yep. It's just weird because you would think we'd want to be ahead of that, because if Twitter can do that, then TV should go, all right, let's match that. And they're not. They're still going in the old ways of delaying it, make sure it's in prime time. Not the old ways, sorry. From 5 years ago.
You went all Obi-Wan on me.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
But you know what I mean? And I hear you, too. It's because when technology offers you the opportunity to really bring things live to people, then you should try to do that, especially right when social media is
they're telling, already ahead of it.
But I think they're trying to build in all of those like television things that live and Twitter can't do, like those backstories and the vignettes and the, you know, all the kind of staging that they do to highlight some of the participants. So people will still watch that too. So one thing that is live, I guess some people are probably taking a family truckster vacation down to Brazil. Maybe not. But we're going to talk about that when we come back. Plus, Dino, you've got some really fun stories where animals are getting involved.
Well, there's a couple things that we'll get into. Yeah, a bat and a cat, and there's all kinds of different things going on here.
312-981-7200. You can share your favorite Olympic moment and your suggestion for a place for people to go or stay away from on that family kind of truckster vacation. Everybody piles into the station wagon. All that when we come back. But right now, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 4 o'clock news time, and here's Roger Badish. WGN, Dane Neal in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. I've got good friend and longtime participant Dino Tiberi to my right. And did you guys ever do any of those, all right, everybody, get in the car, we're going to drive an unbearable amount of time, and it's going to be unpleasant, you're going to be car sick. You're gonna...
Yeah, we did. Absolutely, we did that. We used to go to the Dells every year, of course, as everyone else does. But we did a Florida road trip in a station wagon.
There you go.
What a nightmare.
That's
that was
discomfort.
Oh my god. And then we had a blowout on the way back in Indiana.
Nice. With the, I mean, not nice, you survived obviously.
Yeah, everything was fine, but it was like, you know, it was right out of vacation. I mean, we made stops at all these places. My mom would collect, she had these, she would get like a spoon
like
from
collect,
every state.
And I'm thinking to myself, the bedpans.
No, she would always, she had this collection of spoons for every state she was in.
Oh, good.
It was like, you know, they did that stuff back in the 70s. You know, he didn't think twice about it, he just did it. You know, he'd just go.
Of course, because spoons, I mean, it was.
Well,
the,
sure,
it
was that was a hot item then.
The coin of the realm. At the time,
that's
with those,
exactly right.
The spoons, and I'm imagining, and I think I've seen some of these, and you know, where you've got it's in maybe the den or the kitchen or maybe the diner,
sure.
Whatever. It's this,
yeah, this display with
a
everything.
Display case with, yep, a lot of little spoons, and everybody seemed to be on board with making them, right? Because
right,
you'd find them all over, and so at the top of the spoon, the rest of it would be a functional spoon that you could use.
And there was a state.
Yeah,
thing little, on the top of it, right?
A little like enameled picture of like a mountain,
right?
Say Colorado.
It would just say the, yeah, it would just say the state. And she just collected stuff like that, among other things. We would go on these trips, but you know, that one to Florida was, I think we were at Daytona, and it was just the longest ride back and forth,
right?
Because you know, there was.
I mean, it's far. I mean, I get that it's far, but when you have like the kids in there, like nothing. No amount of travel is easy. I don't care if you're just traveling to Walmart, is easy when you have multiple kids, because it's hard to, they're like cats, you know, they keep escaping and running,
right,
and get it back in here. No, I have to go to the bath, you know, whatever, however it works. And then you put them all in a car and then you drive, and you don't have a lot of the, you know, technology distractions that you have today. Like,
yeah,
when we
back
were kids,
then you didn't have
you
any
were
of that
counting
stuff.
Like the color of different cars going by, or
right.
You know, I mean,
we played slug bug. When there was a Volkswagen bug would go by, we'd punch the other guy in the arm.
<You're> like, that's old school fun.
That's right. Hey, that's the kind of stuff you had to focus on, because you didn't have anything. The most, you know, I had a transistor radio, and you know, but of course, when you're in a car, you're at the mercy of what your parents' bad music decisions were, and you had to live with that stuff. Now everyone's got headphones and all kinds of stuff. You don't have to worry about any of that. You put a movie in, the kids are, you know, just mesmerized for a couple hours, and then you put another one in.
The way back from Florida, maybe a year ago, we just watched Wreck-It Ralph 8 times. That's all you did. And we liked it. Well, yeah, because you think about it, you're kind of at the mercy from a radio perspective of whatever happens to be. In Chicagoland, we're blessed with, you know, a lot of great things to listen to, most of them here on this station. But as you drive farther out into the netherworld,
you don't have that luxury anymore. Now it's you're in the middle of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're in the middle of nowhere, and you're listening to whatever the best that they can put together. But now, like I say, everything's different.
So we're looking to do that. What they have for, I think the National Park Service has got it's a relatively new thing, or at least I've heard about it just in the last year, where they're, if you've got a student that's part of the family, if they're, I think, between 9 and 10 or 3rd or 4th grade or something like that, then that student and their entire family have free access to the national parks.
Wow.
For that year. So I think it's an effort to like get people out there to, sure. to see, you know, Old Faithful or whatever.
Right.
But all that stuff that's in the middle, you know, between here and there, between here and, you know, the Grand Canyon,
right.
is all of those places. And some of them are folksy and some of them are slightly terrifying and probably a little Chainsaw Massacre-ish. You know, like the, like we talked about the world's largest ball of twine or, you know, where yeah. it's obvious that this is just some kind of stand that they've set up.
Right.
You know, did as far as like Stuckey's, remember the Stuckey's?
Oh yeah. We know. Yeah. Once in a while you have to stop there. I mean, you got to get gas and then you had to stop and get food someplace. And that was combined the best of both worlds there. You see those things that the truck stops and all the different places. It's pretty amazing. And a lot of them are still, the names have changed, but the premise is still the same. But, you know, years ago, driving in the car, I was like, yeah, let's stop. There's the Stuckey's at the next exit.
Oh, that's living. That is, well, so between here and there, you run into a lot of interesting people in different situations. And, Dino, you have these stories because those people are living all the time. And you've got a couple funny stories in the news. Whenever we can incorporate animals, because I like animals. Do you like animals? Do you
yeah,
have, do you
have I a pet? It, well, no, actually, I don't right now. And, you know, I need to work on getting that. But
really?
No, not really.
Joey, but... you have a pet? Do you have any kind of pet at home? Even like, because here's the thing. Maxwell, who's our 9-year-old, he in my mom's yard, I was mowing the lawn. He found a toad, and this toad, he brought it home. He's been really good with it. Actually feeds it ants and things like that. It started out, it was named Lily, thought it was a girl toad, then found out that it was chirping and making these noises. He decided through some research that it was a male toad, and then it became Willie, which then kind of morphed into Wilbur, which, and then his full name is now Wilburito.
Awesome.
He lived in the tub for like a month until I found like an old fish tank, and now he's right there in the dining room.
Yeah, I think everybody has a story like that. I can remember bringing home a bunch of tadpoles many years ago, and then they turned into frogs, and we kept them in a pool in the backyard.
Well, that's the magic of life.
And then back into the pond they went once they were big enough to be, you know, we couldn't keep them in the yard. They're jumping all over the place.
Joyce, do you guys have a pet?
We do not, but I always had a bunch of goldfish. We were that family, love. We're my mom's dying for a dog, but my dad doesn't want it, so we've always been like the other animal kind of family. But
the goldfish is the way to go.
The goldfish is the way. Well, I had a betta fish, and it never died. It was like, well, I'm staying here forever, and you're going to have to deal with it. It was like a giveaway at someone's party. It was the oddest goodie bag I've ever received. Here's your betta fish in a bag. Take it home.
See, that's nice. But as a kid, sometimes when you get those, and last year at Naperville Rib Fest, Maxwell won a little
goldfish. Oh, awesome.
Betta fish. Yeah, and it died like by the next morning, so then we had to do the whole...
Yeah. Flush down the toilet?
Well, no, he wanted to bury it in the yard, and it was a big deal.
See, my issue is, when I was younger, I thought, you know, if I'm feeding the fish, they have to eat what we eat. So, like, normally...
Here's
fish,
a steak.
Yeah, fish food's fine, walk through. But I came in one day and I said, oh, of course goldfish can eat chicken McNuggets from McDonald's. Drop one in the bot, drop one in the bowl. Next day, no more goldfish.
Yeah, that's not good to breathe in the nugget.
No.
Well, I used to get those, they have those school fairs when they would have they'd have the goldfish... You could throw a ping pong ball in and you'd come home with a goldfish once if you landed in there. Those things never lasted. Sometimes they wouldn't even make it all the way home.
It's always lasted forever. I think it's with them in the studio today.
Wait, it's up here.
So, Roger, do you have a pet now?
Pets for, oh my God.
Anything exotic? Like a boa constrictor?
No. Even though I've known people with boa constrictor, at college, someone collected snakes.
Oh.
Rufus. We got Rufus. He's a great little dog. We've had him now, I want to say 6 years, approximately. He was about 3 when we got him. He's a great little dog. He loves people, hates dogs. He has been on a trip with us. We took him to Boston
wow.
about 2 years ago, I want to say, 2 or 3 years ago. We didn't, you know, we were uneasy about other people taking care of him. And so we rented a car and got one of those big dog seat cover things for the back so we wouldn't ruin the car, and drove all the way out to Boston and all the way back. And he was pretty good. It was all right.
Like we didn't have anyone to or weren't comfortable with the people watching him. Plus, he'd always expressed an interest in the colonial states.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he wanted to see his heritage.
Wanted to go see the Boston Tea Party reenacted.
Yeah, he wanted to see the Plymouth Rock. He thought he could get a leg up on it, and take care of business.
Well, my mom had. She had ferrets in the house at one point.
What?
Yeah, ferrets.
Oh,
two of them.
I got a ferret story.
Horrible. Yeah. It's like, just one of the worst smelling animals you'll ever see in your life.
So when we come back from this break, if you've got a ferret story or an odd pet story, whether it was your pet or maybe a pet that affected your life in some way, positive or negative, right? And then Dino's got some stories from pets out there in the world doing amazing and slightly amusing things as well.
Yeah, we'll hear about that in a minute. A cat and a bat. We're going to have to hear that story.
Chicken of the cave.
And the owner not too happy at the end of all that. So
it's Dane in for Dave Plyer till 5 on 720 WGN. Oh, man. 720 WGN, Dane in for Dave Plyer today with the best bumper music this side of the Pecos River.
That's some good stuff right there. That'll get your blood flowing in the morning.
We are going to talk about some of the different kind of pet situations, whether you've got a pet, you have a pet, you want to talk about a pet. Roger shared, Dino, you shared, and you mentioned ferrets, and ferrets are the kind of, I've had a couple ferrets.
Really?
I was a hostile witness. They weren't like actually my ferrets. It was a person that I was, with at the time had ferrets, loved the ferrets. Ferrets are they're actually sort of nice, but you mentioned smelly and a little bit violent. They'll bite you and then they really stink.
Yeah, they're just, and my mom, it could have been Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom in our house because we had a little bit of everything. Fish, ferrets, dogs, cats, birds. I mean, she loved animals and just had a little bit of everything. And the ferrets, they were a handful. They were the ones. The two ferrets didn't last all that long because they were just troublemakers.
What does that mean? They
just
were
running around. Oh. Well, yeah, we had to bring them back to a pet store or something because we couldn't keep them in the house. There was too much going on.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that. Like, we had to euthanize them. We didn't kill them. We had to eat them or we sold them to,
we just
ferret trafficker.
We brought them back to where we got them from at the pet store, and that was it. So, but that's my ferret story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, yeah. Because they have them at the – and they're not cheap. I think they're like $130-some-odd. So we're at the pet store getting some supplies for Wilburito, the toad, Maxwell's toad. And he's like, well, what's that? Because it looks like kind of a weasel thing.
Yeah, long tail in the back.
Yeah. And I'm like, you don't want one of those. I mean, number one, it's $130. Number two, it'll bite you, right? And then they just smell. Right?
Yeah, it wasn't a pleasant scent when they weren't, when she had them in the house with all the other animals.
With all the other animals.
Yeah, we had cats, everything, dogs, bird, fish.
Dito's like, didn't you see us on the news?
Yeah, we should have had someone in there.
From the 224, hi, Dane. Thanks to my sister and niece. I have been crazy for cavies, a.k.a. guinea pigs, from 2000.
So it's been, 16 years of guinea pigs.
Now, I don't know what the life expectancy of a guinea pig is, but does it get that old?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe they've rotated a few in and out of there at this point. I'm not sure.
That's Lester number one and Lester number two. So we're going to talk about some of the – Joey had mentioned that he tried to feed his goldfish, a chicken McNugget, which is never advisable. But you're saying that on the pizza side, which maybe fish would enjoy, that there's going to be an ATM for pizza?
Well, yeah, Xavier University in Ohio is the first pizza ATM. They cook pizzas on demand. So if, you need a, you don't have to, in the middle of the night, you figure out, I'm going to get a pizza and nothing's open. Now they have an ATM that cooks the pizza for you.
Wait a minute. Okay, first off, it sounds horrible, right? I mean, I like the things that you said. You brought up a couple things that I'm sure were discussed in the board meeting for this investment happened, which is on demand and pizza, right?
Yep.
But then this whole like have it in this, I'm thinking of a red box, right, out next to a closed Walgreens or something, where you're going.
They
up
just have it. Yeah, I think it's right outside of a dorm, and they were in the dorm, and 70 pizzas cooked for 3 minutes at 500 degrees. And I guess it's for a 12-inch pizza, it's $9.
And just how long does it take to cook?
3 minutes.
Okay.
Well, so then, it's quick.
But still, it's not just automatically, it just doesn't dump it into a drawer that you pull out. Because I think what you've got here is sort of like, and I always love these, is that you're at the Brookfield Zoo where it makes its your own little wax statue.
Oh, yeah, big fan
right,
of those.
With a giant plexiglass bubble over the top. Maybe if it shows it, it kind of makes the pizza in front of you, like drops on
yeah,
there,
I don't
like
think
the sausages.
That for the picture I saw, it didn't look like it was happening. That they got a guy back there putting the ingredients on it.
No, it's all automated. But yeah. You're like, oh, I'll have some green peppers, you know, and then it like, little thing dumps them out. I think that would work.
I didn't see that in the story as far as the ingredients, I'm sure there's just a variety of different ones, but you know whether it was a supreme pizza one or a sausage or anything like that.
Right.
But you know the fact that you're looking for something late night and you can't get nothing's open. $9, $9 for a 12-inch pizza
takes a village, right? Yeah. So your scientists, right, to go in the lab and come up with this great idea, and then engineers and some of the best and brightest to bring pizzas, bad probably pizzas. Now, you mentioned before we went to the break, you mentioned Chicken of the Cave, right? Which is the bat, right?
Yeah, the bat. There was a story in Florida, where else, where a man's cat brought a live bat into his house.
Just like, hey, I met a friend.
I met a buddy, brought him in, and he started flying around, and the guy couldn't get the bat out of the house. They had he had him around a towel around him. It got away. Kept flying. Finally, he opened up a door and a bat flew out. And as a result of the cat dragging the bat around the house, he apparently turned and made an obscene gesture to his cat.
Oh.
That was the end of the story.
See, cats are, I think, don't they naturally just kind of, they're dismissive and they'll just ignore. I'm sure the cat was not affected.
Yeah, he didn't really care. But the fact that the guy's chasing a bat around, they had a video of it too, which was pretty comical, of him trying to get this bat out of his house. I mean, I've never had a bat in my place, but I couldn't imagine if you did how that would.
How would a cat catch the bat?
I'm not sure, but he said he dragged him in,
and then let him go.
Okay. He just said he was the cat was jumping up and down on the bat initially, and then let him go. Flying around the house and then just ends up flying out the door.
Well, good thing kids can't find bats and catch them and bring them home and make them pets, because that would be the kind of thing that I would probably allow. We had from the 734, came home from work one day, and in addition to the dog and school fair goldfish, my girlfriend and her son had brought two poison dart frogs and a sugar glider. I ended up having to feed the frogs protein-covered fruit flies. Where do you get
that
those?
Seems very involved.
Well, the word poison is there. Poison dart frogs? I mean, are they? Because some frogs are poisonous, right? If you touch them,
right,
they have some sort of weird coating.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're talking about here, is that they didn't realize they were two poison dart frogs and a sugar glider.
How do you get those from? Where did they get it from? From school?
The black market.
Wait, it's. Yeah. I had come home from school.
Hey, I got a couple of poison dart frogs here.
It's the dark web. There's probably.
How did this person know it was a poison dart frog anyway? Was there spotting on there?
He gave him his business card,
It's like, I'm sure you're probably aware I'm a poison dart frog. Well, we think about those weird pets that people have, whether you buy yourself a caiman alligator, and then, of course, over the time it grows and then eats your cat, or those people that bring Roger, you mentioned in college you had the snake guy,
right,
or you have like the tarantula character, right?
I kill spiders. I know that goes against all naturalists' edicts. Don't kill the spider. It's very helpful and useful. No, it's scary, and it has to die when it's crawling up next to your face.
Roger,
I'm sorry.
I am 100% on the Roger page with that.
All right.
I think that whole, like, they're good for the environment, and I'm sure they are, right? No. That's the big spider lobby talking, because they have...
Yeah, I don't go for that.
Preserve the spider.
No, preserve. I got a preserve for you.
We've got some from the 224. Laura said that she's got pigs. Okay, the potbelly pig thing.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
They're cute, smart, maybe a little too
smart.
Somebody
in our – Bridget, my wife, goes for walks through the neighborhood. She tells me there's a house about six blocks over with chickens.
Don't say you hate chickens. Because chickens are kind of, I mean, I don't have a chicken, but I'm not like against chickens. Like spiders, I was with you, but I mean, like chickens
seem
all right.
Saying that chickens are bad. I mean, they're, you know, probably producing eggs and you know, Friday night is fried chicken night. I mean, you never know, you know, just saying. Little mashed potatoes.
Do you have one more animal story before we go to break?
There was one other one about I'm trying to get the information up on it. There was a cat that was stuck in a car, and they used a chainsaw to get him out. I don't know why they decided to tear the car up to do that.
Wow.
All right, bring the chainsaw in, boys. We can't go through the window because the cat locked all the doors.
Yo, why couldn't they bust the window?
AAA was off that week.
No, but wait a minute. Was it... Okay, so this is like a Jaws of Life situation, a chainsaw, or was like the cat in a hot car and people just kind of over-panicked?
Yeah, I think pretty much. It says here, a Florida woman, of course, again, in Vero Beach, Florida, a Florida woman whose newly adopted kitten vanished into it was in the dashboard of the car.
Oh.
What do you mean, in the dashboard?
Vanished into the dashboard of her car. She ended up allowing mechanics then to destroy the vehicle with a chainsaw because... It crawled up into the dash console of her 1995 Monte Carlo and refused to come back out.
Yeah, but if you're heading into the dashboard with a chainsaw, you don't know where that cat is.
Oh, exactly.
You could have a problem.
We could feel him, but we couldn't reach him, she said.
Oh, okay.
They tried to coax the kitten out of the dash with food and water.
Yeah, that's what you do, and you just stick with that.
But then 20 hours passed, and the cat had still not come out.
Send the Cayman crocodile up in there after him.
So she reached out on Facebook for someone to help her, and they sent
a guy
someone
showed
over
up
to...
with a chainsaw.
Yeah, well, he was all out. His hammers were being used. Yeah. He lent them out. You know, he couldn't break. Oh my
she
God!
Said she decided to sacrifice her $800 car to rescue the cat because, in the end, it's just a baby.
In defense of the cat, the 95 Monte Carlo was a very roomy car with a very roomy space.
Apparently,
dash.
Not for the cat.
Oh man, I can't imagine a cat getting up and caught up inside of the dashboard. Why does that even happen?
Well, you know, you go if you get underneath in the front seat and you look up underneath. The dashboard, they've got all the wires and the cables and all of that stuff up in there.
Yeah, that's
And
that's
I've done nice. Work on some cars up there, you know, putting in new radios and stuff like that. You can get up in there and often get your hand stuck in there, too. So I can understand getting a little kitty cat stuck up in there.
Roger's like, kitty. The cat going to be all right, Uncle Lair? Yeah, from the 773, a pet giant African snail. We'll hear about that plus much more when we come back. 312-981-7200. Your pet, your odd pet, the pet that your neighbor had, the pet that you had to euthanize, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But right now it is 32 minutes after 4 o'clock. And news time, here's Roger Badish. /7:20 WGN. Dane Neal in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. today. Imminence Front by The Who, I think.
Yep, that's a good tune right there.
It's a put-on. I love it. Thank you, Joey, so much for all the great music. But there's so many stories out there, the weird and wonderful world. And these kind of stories make you think, number one, you feel a little grateful that it's not you.
True.
Right, with a bat flying around your house or even being forced to subject yourself to, you know, vending machine pizzas. But so you've got a couple other ones.
Yeah, I got one out of Philadelphia where a couple of guys decided they were going to beat the heat by devising their own quote-unquote dumpster pools by lining dumpsters with tarp or some kind of material like a liner, and then getting inside the pool and enjoying. But they were using fire hydrants, apparently, to fill the dumpster pools up, because that's a lot of water.
Yes.
And then there were issues where the firemen were trying to use the fire hydrants and didn't have any water pressure. So now the city's cracking down on the dumpster pools. So that's a story out of Philadelphia. Apparently, these two guys said it was initially well-received by the community, But now, not so much. Now, breaking the law apparently supersedes that. So,
well, I think putting some of the other structures in the city at risk, right? Because you're using that water, which is a finite resource. You're using it for your own entertainment.
Yeah, you and your buddies sitting in there having a couple of cold ones, you're and all soaking. Of a sudden there's a fire.
And then what are you going to do?
Not much.
Right. You're going to stay in the dumpster. That's where you belong. When you first brought up the dumpster and the swimming thing, I thought for sure it was another Rio situation where...
Trying to simulate it. They figured, we didn't get the Olympics here.
Sure,
so
we're going
to...
Yeah.
That's the Brazilian training center.
God, you get the Olympic music back up behind it.
Like, get into the dumpster. You need those bigger dumpsters, though, the good ones.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And but that's just interesting that two guys decide, well, it's too hot. Yeah, I just have that music come in.
And a new sport this year. It's the dumpster swimming.
Swimming Olympics. We didn't want to have to go through sewage. We thought we'd do it right here in the dumpster.
It's, right. It's they come out, the spokesperson, and says that it's actually much safer. And it's kind of like a lap pool.
Right.
And you just go with that.
You continue a flow. You just keep going along, and that's it. You hand yourself a cold beer, and you're in.
But what about the remnants of whatever was in the dumpster?
So not really sure about that. They don't mention that in the story at all. I think they put the tarp over the top of it, so it was. I'm guessing it was empty.
It'd be tough to get out of, too. Like, the dumpsters
are deep.
Like, you can't even... If you're thrown into there, like in a nice movie, as a bully tosses you in, you can't get out. How do you get out if it's filled with water?
Well, you know what? You go to a pool supply store, get yourself a little ladder and hooks up over the side.
If you got your floaties going.
There you go.
Yeah, they said they had that, and they had those things in the pool, too. So, I can't imagine that... I don't know how many people could fit in one of those, maybe four or five. I'm not sure.
Depending on the size of the dumpster or yeah, the size of the people. Well, Joey had mentioned the depth there, and I think it lends itself to, because we've all seen those movies, right, where people either trying to evade something like a Jason Bourne movie, right?
Right, where they hide in a dumpster.
Or you jump off of a building
and land in one.
Yeah,
right.
Hope that there's no sharp garbage, right? So if you time it, I think if you... Because they do this all the time, right? You know, those cliff divers, you hit the water, and I think what you need to do is you arch your back right away, and then there's this, like, curve that you, and then you come up that way.
And then you avoid the couch, and you get a perfect 10.
So I think if you did that with the dumpster.
Yeah, I was going to say, the couch looked really familiar in Rio than the one was in our dumpster here.
Because you won, okay. So, people know whose couch it is, probably. It's probably a recognizable couch. Plus, I'm sure there were some witnesses, because the couches typically are large pieces of furniture.
Yeah.
So there had to be, unless you're...
Yeah, how did it get in there?
I hope it's still in 1950s plastic, just wrapped in the water.
Yeah, there's a console TV right next to it.
Someone had to be dragging that down the street, onto the beach, and then what, just...
Like, throws it in.
Pushing it, and then it sails off. I mean, that seems like... For someone who's just going to throw their couch away, why don't you just, like, leave it outside?
Right.
Like,
somebody might take it off your hands.
Why put it in the water and affect the Olympics like this? It's terrible. So, do you know what was the – did you had one more.
Well, I have one other story about an Illinois man who recently was awarded $675,000 after a dentist apparently misplaced one of his instruments inside of the guy's stomach. It dropped – he didn't use one of the dams. I guess they have a dental dam that keeps the – instruments or things from falling into your throat, and there wasn't one used in this procedure. So,
was it like a little mirror or something?
No, it was a little. It's kind of a long, not a real long instrument, maybe a couple inches long, but it was like something you use for a root canal, like you're cleaning out a root canal.
Sounds like a pointy thing.
Yeah, kind of looked like a pair of tweezers almost, but a little bit longer. And it fell into the guy's. It went down into the guy's stomach. And he had to have emergency surgery to remove it.
Wow.
And so, I mean, how do you... And after, after the procedure, apparently the dentist was looking for the tool.
Hey,
how do you not know you dropped it down the guy's throat?
Where's my tweezers? There they are.
Yeah, there they are. So, they had, $675,000 later, the man was compensated, but he said the pain was unbearable. I'm like, yeah, if you had some kind of metal object in your stomach, I can imagine that might be a problem.
847 said new meaning for dumpster diving from the last story, so that's very clever. But when you think about things, whether it's something like that seems like it could be a little dangerous, or pouring hot coffee in your lap,
sure,
for like $1 million.
Right.
You know, you wonder, you'd like to do an interview with that guy saying, hey, you know, I'm guessing it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right, swallowing the tweezers. But $675,000, you know, as long as I think the end of the story is, and they all lived happily ever after, if your part of that story is with $675,000, I mean, I think a lot of us would probably swallow tweezers all day.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is, how does a dentist just, can't find my tool. And then it's like, we can't find it anywhere. Oh, yeah, that's right. You didn't put a dental dam in, so it fell into the guy's stomach.
Well, that happens all the time. I mean, I don't want to say all the time. Hopefully not all the time. But it happens on a regular basis where they leave things in people and sew them back up, right?
I think we've read stories like that before in the past.
Yeah, yeah. So these things happen. Well, the moral of the story is, you know, definitely get paid, right? Because I'm sure
use the judicial system.
Well, at some point, the dentist probably said, hey, you know, accidentally, this was, he didn't say, like, sure, hey, here's a big check. You know, I'm sure that was uncomfortable. So we'll get to more of that in just a bit. Plus, we've got Walter Jacobson's coming up. We're going to wrap up the show. We're going to cover some more of this. We're going to talk about some of the Olympic moments we're going to want to watch. And, of course, baseball is going to be one of the Olympic sports next time around, or unless it is this time. I know it's back on.
I don't think it is in this go-around, but, yeah, I think it's the next time.
And we'll have an Anthony Rizzo playing for the Italian team again.
It's like we did a couple of years ago, right?
And we'll talk about who he's playing for now. We'll talk some Cubs as well when we come back. It's Dane in for Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Dave Plyer for another few minutes here as we kind of break into the first weekend of the Olympics.
Yep.
You know, it's happening down in Rio. We can only hope, I don't know what the odds are, that we won't see any more couch-related incidents, or maybe something like crazier or funnier, who knows, or even something kind of tragic, right, with the, if it's just an extra. They mentioned there's like bodies floating in the water. You think that they would. It's one thing to have it be kind of, hey, there's just generally a lot of junk in the water.
Right.
But you think, while the race is going on, you just get out there and clear that stuff
out. Right. You would think at some point in the, how many years has it been since they got it, you might want to have a plan to make sure the waterways are semi-clean. And that was a concern they had when they awarded it to Rio, was that, that their ecosystem wasn't the greatest, and they're finding out it's true.
It's a couch. It's not an ecosystem. Yeah. Well, at least for this point, when they bring baseball back as an Olympic sport, people are excited about that. The chances of let's say, an Addison Russell tripping over a couch while he's trying to make a play out of the field is unlikely. And that's good, because the Cubs don't want to have any kind of stumbling points as they kind of move forward towards what will hopefully be a playoff run. Like you watched them. They played the A's yesterday. They're going to play them again today.
Yeah, the first two games have been pretty much the Cubs shut them out today. On Friday, they won 7-2. They got two good pitching efforts out of Lester and Arrieta the last 2 days. They'll go into the finale tomorrow, and hopefully they'll be able to get a sweep. And then this is an odd part of the schedule for the Cubs right now, Dane. They had a 10-game homestand. They go to Oakland for 3 days, and they come back home and play another 10 games at home. At Wrigley, coming up against the Angels and the Brewers, and they've got a good chunk of August is going to be at home, and this is really where I think this next homestand could really be where they push the lead even out further. Right now they're at 9.5 over the Cardinals, depending on what happened tonight. Well, the Cubs already won, so nothing's going to change there. The only thing that can happen is that the Cardinals will be a little further behind, but. The Cubs are 15-6 in their last 21 games. So, I mean, they had their rough patch right before the All-Star break, and now it seems like they're back on all cylinders going forward. So
you've got all those games at home, and even some of the – I mean, they're out in California at least at this point for this little stretch, but even the away games that you had are like
right.
in
Milwaukee
or at Southside.
Right.
These are basically close, and you're right, because that whole, what was it, 24 straight games – like in a row
right.
that they played without a day off, you know, and a lot of road trips, and they did lose a lot of those games. You know, they had some injuries and they lost some games, but they had done enough of the right things up until then so that you still, what did the lead get to? 5.5 games, 6 games
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, it got down to like, I think it was like 5.5 or 6. And then somebody said today, I don't know if it was during the, on the radio side or on the TV side, that we had the Cubs haven't been west of St. Louis since May. This is the first time they've been back out west since May 24th or something. And I know they've got one more trip to go out to L.A. coming up. But really, the schedule's been kind of kind to them here in the middle of the – after that 24 days in a row, now it's kind of turned the Cubs' way and they're taking advantage of it. So hopefully we'll see them make a little bit more of a push here coming up in the remainder of the month.
With the trade deadline, they ended up getting – you know, they got Chapman, so they've got the great closer that you would want. They've done all the things. They've weathered the storms of some injuries up until this point, some big ones, and then, of course, just some kind of nagging ones. But you see how important Fowler is to the whole situation.
God, yeah.
Like, he just is like a – he just starts the whole thing up. And, and what's great is that these guys, including Soler, as they came back, they immediately started – you know, it wasn't like they eased into trying to kind of get back to where they were. It was like right away they were winning games.
Yeah, he had a 3-run home run on Friday night, Soler, in his first at-bat back. And, you know, this Cub team, I don't think I can ever remember that where they have so much talent that they send guys down to the minors because their other guys are out of options. So they send LaStella down, and he should be on the team right now. They just he was the odd man out because he had options left. And apparently he's not real happy about that move, but – the Cubs have never been this deep as far as I can remember. And, you know, a guy goes out and they've got other guys to step in there. But you're right. Fowler's the guy that really drives this team. And when he's on and he's getting on base, it just sets the table for the rest of the guys behind him to knock him in. And jumping out the leads in the last couple of games against Oakland have helped. So we'll see what happens going forward.
And it allows guys like Zobrist to have little mini slumps here and there. And you can have, because there's so many players that you can have, like two or three of them that aren't even, or Hayward, like barely doing anything. He had some key hits over the last couple of days, but to where it's okay.
Right? Yeah,
you don't notice it because you don't need everybody to produce at any one time.
Right, and Joe Maddon's done a great job of juggling, you know, the lineups to be able to get guys rest and get, you know, you got a guy named, Baez, he's been, you know, playing really well, and he had a day off today. He'll probably be back in the lineup tomorrow. But he's finding ways to get guys out of the lineup and give them a break. And hope that's only going to help them when they go down the stretch in the rest of August and September.
So with everything going as well as it could possibly go, and if you at the beginning of the season you drew it up and you said, wow, hopefully we'll be able to get this player, you're going to have some issues and some challenges. But at this point in the season, you're going to be 20-some-odd games over 500. You're going to have pushing like a 10-game lead. Over the Cardinals, then it comes down to like, well, whatever happens, and this is where you hope, because what do they say? Like a great manager wins you like a couple games, 4 or 5 games or something like that. But you like Joe Maddon is one of those very active players, and I mean coaches where he gets involved, and sometimes based on just whether it's an extra inning game or whatever, he's had to be like super creative. Right, I mean, a Dusty Baker or somebody who's like either or Lou Piniella being asleep in the dugout isn't making those moves to like make those things happen.
I mean, that game last Sunday that I was at was just a microcosm of what he's been doing all along.
There was a couple games right there where he was actively, he had to like move these chess pieces
he put Wood in the outfield, and he made a great catch against the wall, and then he brought him back in to pitch. Because he knew that there were left-handed hitters coming up, and he was running out of pitchers. He got down to—he used the entire bullpen up, and there's 9 guys in the bullpen right now. So, for him to do that, you've got to be creative, and that's exactly what he's been doing all season long. And so, you know, we'll see how this plays out, but it's been amazing. This is one of those seasons that you just don't.
And it isn't one of those that you hope for. You just it's the lightning in a bottle, you know, you hope they're the right team, you hope they make some things happen, they get some momentum. There's a lot of things that are actively being done that are allowing for a lot of these victories. It isn't just like, whoa, so and so's there, everyone's playing great, you know, like it was maybe in 08 or 2003,
right,
where you're just like, just is just happening.
Well, and there are guys that are struggling right now. You mentioned Hayward, he hasn't done a whole heck of a lot with the bat. He's played great defense in the outfield, But, you know, there's times where he needs days off, and, you know, and Madden's going to give it to him because now he's got the depth where he can move people in different positions, and he's like a mad scientist in the dugout. It's really something to watch. I've never really seen anybody, you know, be as creative as he is day to day with his lineups.
Like really doing it, yeah. Not just
not
doing
just
what a lot
about
of
it or, right.
Where managers make up a lineup card and you have to make substitutions, but in game management, he is doing things where there's, you know, it's hard to say how many games he's winning for them or by actively being a part of it, as opposed to just kind of putting the players out there
and letting them play
and letting the baseball happen. And I think this is where you're going to see, not that we haven't seen like the value of Joe Maddon already. I mean, we understand that this is like the perfect guy in the perfect situation. You wouldn't want anybody else. There is no other person. I remember seeing like Joe Girardi. I was watching and saw like a Yankees game and remember when there was a big full court press to try to get Joe Girardi to come back.
To be the manager.
To be the manager. And there's just like, you look at that and you're like, man, I'm so glad we didn't get him.
It's kind of like Chicago in the Olympics, Dane. Glad we didn't get those either.
We're going to get those pesky Olympics. We don't have extra couches.
You got that right.
We don't have time for that.
But we got dumpster pools.
That's exactly right.
So what you're looking at now, and before we get to Walter Jacobson, is this is like where he's really going to need to do what he wants to do. You think of that Mariners team that had so many victories and then they get into the playoffs and then they lose. This is where the shame is, right? Is it's one thing to be that upstart underdog team.
Right.
Overachieving.
Now everybody's chasing you. So you're, as he said, embrace the target when the season started. And, you know, I can't imagine what's going to happen when you get to September 1, when you get the call ups. Now he's going to have even more people to be putting in different positions too. Because they can add up to another 10 players, I believe, or something like 15 players if they wanted to. But there's not even enough room right now for the guys they have.
Right, there's not enough room for any more good players in the team. It's going to be exciting to watch as we go down the stretch. It's a good time to be a Chicago sports fan for sure. It is Sunday morning, and it's time we're going to check out. When we come back from Walter Jacobson, we're going to wrap up the show and thank everybody. But right now, Sunday morning, it's Walter Jacobson.
Some stories in the news in Chicago never end. They go on, it seems, forever. One of the best ever is the George Lucas Museum versus the Friends of the Parks. Lucas wanting his museum on the lakefront. Friends of the Parks wanting it anywhere but the lakefront. Lucas chose a spot south of Soldier Field toward McCormick Place on what is now a parking lot. Friends of the Parks filed a lawsuit to stop him. Lucas got tired of the haggling and left Chicago to build his museum in California. End of story? No, because there's a chapter yet to be told, which is that 2 weeks before Lucas left, a Chicago developer offered him, free of charge, airspace on which to build his museum, just a few hundred yards from that parking lot, just west of Lakeshore Drive. Lucas liked that idea, enough so that he had his people contact the developer to discuss it, and the idea was then taken to City Hall, where the mayor's people dismissed it. Too busy or something, who knows? They never even responded. So is that the end of the story? Not yet, because there's this to tell. 2 years ago, when Lucas and the mayor announced the museum, way back then, if the mayor had talked to Friends of the Parks about it, there would not have been a lawsuit, and Lucas would now be building his museum in Chicago. The end of the story is that Mayor Emanuel blew it. The moral of the story is, don't believe that Rahm Emanuel is as savvy a politician as we think he is, because he isn't.
I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WGNplus.com.
Big thanks to everybody who participated in the show. Thanks to all the listeners who called in and texted in. Thanks to Adam Rank from NFL Network, who shared the Hall of Fame weekend with us. That was great. Dino, thanks for being in today.
No problem, Dane.
Joey, awesome on the music. Good stuff. And stay tuned to WGN. Right now, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. It is 5 o'clock news time, and here's Susan Berkus.